again, friends. And you are my friends, and welcome to another special holiday edition of the 605 Super Podcast. It's opening day Star Wars, celebrating one of the most important days each and every year. Not WrestleMania, but opening day of the baseball season, which for me will be on Monday afternoon when my Mets begin their drive for the World Championship. And I'm joined right now by John McAdam, very popular co-host. John, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, thank you. My Boston Red Sox also have opening day on Monday, and it is snowing out like crazy as we speak. So welcome to New England.
Is it? I haven't checked the weather. It's snowing up there right now?
Looking out the window, yes, it is. It is still snowing. We're getting about 8 to 10 inches today.
Wow. Wow. Is this? When was the last time you got it this late in the year?
Oh, I mean, when I first moved up here, we had a snowstorm on May 14th. And that, like, closed school and everything. So that I think that's the record.
I realized it was a dirty question after I asked it. When was the last time you got it this late in the year? But but we'll ask everyone who their pick is to win the World Series this year. But, of course, this is the Super Podcast. This is another Star Wars special. So we're going to be talking about the wonderful world of professional wrestling. We're going to talk a little bit about our WrestleMania memories here on the show today. But I wanted to mention something to you, and you're probably the perfect person to talk to about this. Do you have the WWE Network, John?
Of course.
They just uploaded, you know, I could be off, it could be wrong by a couple of episodes here, but every single Mid-South episode from 82 into early 83 and some from 81, which is great. I mean, it's missing all the local promos and there's a lot of music issues, which we'll talk about in a second here, but it's just wonderful now to be able to watch in order Mid-South wrestling. And I decided just to, yesterday I had a few minutes before the Hall of Fame. And I said, I'm not going to be on my computer. I'm going to just relax a little bit for once. And let me put on a random episode of Mid-South. And I picked one. It was November 13th, 1982. And this was actually a great one to pick. And that's why I'm bringing it up. Because I want to say to any of the listeners out there who aren't all that familiar with Mid-South wrestling, watch this episode. Specifically for the first 20 minutes of the episode. John, this is the week after Stagger Lee debuted. S. Lee is Stagger Lee. So the opening segment is Bill Watts at the ring with DiBiase and Matt Bourne. And they recap a couple weeks back. It's JYD and Mr. Olympia against DiBiase and Bourne, loser leaves town. The gorilla comes to ringside and it takes off its mask. And it's actually a great moment. I haven't watched it in a long time. Bill Watts starts yelling, "It's Dugan! It's Dugan!"
That was phenomenal. They, earlier in the episode, Watts just casually says, yeah, we don't know where Dugan is. He's probably locked up someplace. So DiBiase went out and got Matt Bourne from Atlanta. And then the gorilla's just sitting there. We're having fun with the kids, and we know what happens next.
Do you think at any point Chip Duggan went up to Bill Watts and said, excuse me, Bill, cowboy, it's Dugan. Just wanted to correct you now. Hopefully I'll be here several years. It's Dugan, Jim Dugan. You know, all right, got it. Won't happen again, Dugan.
One of the best parts about that show was Watts got so disgusted by what happened. He couldn't do commentary anymore because JYD was gone.
I think Watts has a serious argument to be made for being the best commentator of all time. And
yes,
different than Lance Russell, different than Gordon Sully, more of a color commentator, even though he ended up doing play-by-play also. But between his genius for putting together a one-hour show and his booking knowledge and knowing where everything's supposed to be and the logic, he's tremendous. There's no one better.
He gets his personalities and his storylines across too. Watts, my only complaint about Watts is he did need a little bit of a filter. I remember one episode, like it was, I think it was a Gino Hernandez versus Mr. Wrestling 2 match. It's on the network, and he did nothing but bitch about the Oklahoma Arizona State game.
Yeah, you know, it's like every promotion had a heel Russian. And the commentators would all, you know, make little remarks about the Russian. Bill Watts would go into like this Reagan-era spiel.
Yes.
About the Iron Curtain and the Cold War and everything.
One other episode that I thought was tremendous and I recommend to everyone, it was the July 3rd, 1982 episode watch the Ted DiBiase versus Tom Jones match, and DiBiase had just turned on JYD the week before. He was denying loading up the glove, and he was kind of in that not really a heel 100% yet mode. And this match, he just completely cemented his turn. And I'll leave it for everyone to listen to, but you should hear Watts at the end of this match. He's gold.
Well, on this episode I'm talking about here, the November 13th, 82 one, they show that first clip of, you know, the gorilla mask and it being Jim Duggan, whatever we want to call him. And then they go back to DiBiase and Bourne, and they're kind of in a good mood. They show the next clip, and it's that amazing scene where DiBiase's in the ring. He's about to fight S. Lee, and it's Randy mm-hmm. Pee Wee Anderson with no shirt on. And they unfold the banner. And Reese Bowden, who had no personality whatsoever, goes, "Well, S. Lee is Stagger Lee." And they play Lloyd Price's Stagger Lee. And Stagger Lee comes out. And by the way, I don't know if it's just me, but JYD seems a lot quicker as Stagger Lee than he does as the JYD. Go watch that clip. He's throwing fast punches. He's moving. Of course, it was about a minute and a half. But he seems pretty quick. And then they cut out of that. Now, on the WWE Network, they don't use the song Stagger Lee. Which
right.
we understand, right? You know, there are all these issues. Vince McMahon doesn't want to pony up for any music. He did it for CM Punk, and they must have really gotten a sweetheart deal. Living Color must have really been down on their luck, just looking for any kind of money that they made that deal. But to me, like, the egregious ones, the ones that it's really necessary, are Midnight Express, are JYD, and are Eye of the Tiger era Hulk Hogan. Because you never get the complete story. Like, even WrestleMania 3, which I'm sure we'll talk about on this show, you can't watch that thing, the edited one now, because Steamboat has some generic song they give him as opposed to Sirius by the Alan Parsons Project. Which really, before you thought of your world champion Chicago Bulls, you applied that song to Ricky Steamboat. And it's gone. It's just erased from history. It's not there anymore.
I think I'm a little too used to it, because 10 years ago when I got WWF 24/7, I would watch the old ECW episodes, and the music was such an integral part of ECW, or to me it was. It really was. And when you hear, you know, the Raven or Sandman come out to this, you know, generic jazzy whatever, it kind of sounds like 90s thing, it doesn't work, and it really throws a monkey wrench in it.
Right. Without the actual music on those ECW shows, you would almost think it was just a bunch of random clips put together by a guy on cocaine in his parents' basement. You would never think that there was a cohesive way of doing this. But again, Stagger Lee wins. They play this generic, I don't even know. Stagger Lee came out in what, 59, 60? I mean, it was a pretty old song. And they replace it with something that sounds even worse and older. So then they go back to DiBiase and Bourne, and they're saying how Stagger Lee is the dog. This is a disgrace. And Bill Watts has the best answer. Bill Watts goes, "Who's the grappler?" And DiBiase's like, "I don't know. Who's Mr. That's Wrestling awesome. Too? He goes, "I don't know." He goes, "We don't know either. They give us P.O. boxes to send their money. We don't know their identities." And, you know, it's just going into the whole idea of why we don't know who masked wrestlers are. It's brilliant.
It really is. That really is brilliant.
Just, who's the grappler? You got a problem with Stagger Lee? Who is the grappler?
Well, you send everybody to P.O. boxes. That's awesome.
Yeah. And then they go to this clip of Tony Atlas bench pressing like 550 pounds with all these fans all around him. And he's being helped. He's being spotted by the Junkyard Dog and Stagger Lee. So they have a second guy in the Stagger Lee outfit. And it's just so tremendous. I really encourage everyone to check it out. But there's a match after that on that week's show. It's not a flashback anymore. It's Matt Bourne versus Stagger Lee. And Stagger Lee comes out to the song Stagger Lee. They didn't edit it out of that version.
Weird.
So in the clip earlier in the show where they show the famous match, it's edited out. And then you watch it later on in the show. It's the actual song. Makes no sense. Makes no sense.
A hit and miss in the editing room. What can we do?
What do you think? When it comes to Mid-South, everyone widely accepts that 84 is its peak in terms of just everything hitting, great matches, revolutionary matches, really, when you look at it, perfect TV shows, a great roster. And also the consensus is by late 83, it wasn't very good, or at least not as good as Mid-South traditionally had been. But 82 is really, there's some great, great stuff. The stuff with Ernie Ladd and the Assassin, there's great stuff in 82.
You know what's in a way is sad? I used to get Mid-South Wrestling on cable in 1980 on the show. It was called World League Wrestling, and they showed stuff from Mid-South and Knoxville, and that stuff is gone forever. But they had some unbelievable material on that. I mean, it was the Freebirds when they first became popular, and you know, I got to see the JYD angle, and apparently that's all gone.
Well, the angle with JYD is on YouTube.
I mean, like the 1980 set, for example, just isn't available.
It isn't, but, and I haven't heard from this guy in a while, and I don't want to say his name because I don't want people to start bombarding him, but there's a listener of mine who grew up in New Orleans and is very close friends with a famous musician who also grew up there. He claims that they have tapes of Mid-South TV from 1980 that they were taping off TV. They have all the local promos and everything during the entire Freebird JYD feud.
Whoa.
And I haven't heard from him in a while. And that's one of those rare things I want to see. You know, you always run the risk when you finally see something you've never seen that you built it up so much in your mind it'll never be that good. I guarantee those promos between the Birds and JYD will be as good as I ever expected, especially with Bill Watts behind the scenes running the ship.
Absolutely, and the whole thing was tremendous. You know how they do the loaded boot angle with the grappler? They actually went to the trouble of explaining it to the point where it made sense. DiBiase put him out of action for about 6 weeks after tangling up in the figure four, and Grappler comes out and he's like, "I have this boot. It's one's a little bit bigger than the other because it keeps the weight off of my bad leg." And then all of a sudden, he's like kicking, you know, not all of a sudden, but when he gets into a competitive match with DiBiase, he does the thing where he, you know, stomps his toe, and that's how the boot gets loaded somehow. But at least it made sense. That's why the one boot's bigger than the other.
That's one of the reasons why Mid-South is so good. You get explanations for everything.
He gets all the details, all the quality control, exactly.
Everything. It's rather brilliant, and that's why Bill Watts has that reputation for putting together a better wrestling show than anyone else, even when he had other bookers. Because everyone always says Bill Watts is a great booker. He did have bookers. Bill Dundee, Buck Robley, Ernie Ladd, various people were in and out of there as bookers. But he oversaw everything, and he made sure it fit into his protocol, fit into the formula that he had developed for the show.
One of the most amazing things about Watts is he had nothing to do with pro wrestling as a fan or anything else until he was out of college.
That's one of the rare things. Usually all the great ones you think of grew up either as really big fans or around wrestling somehow. You know, it was in their family. You're right. He's one of those really rare cases of someone who didn't get into wrestling until he saw it as a career opportunity. And then once he was in it, he treated it very seriously, and he got it, and he got it quick.
Maybe that's an advantage. He has that sort of an outsider's point of view, which is often very valuable. Like sometimes if you have someone like me who's been a wrestling fan all of his life, maybe you just get lost in the trees in the forest, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. I mean, it's very easy, you know, for that to happen. It happens to all of us. But, you know, the other thing is he did have all those minds. You know, he went up to work for Vince Sr. early in his career. And you watch him, and he was already really good. He was already very confident. He seemed like he knew what he was doing. He went to work for Vern, maybe at the point where Vern was most creative, when he was still young. He went to work for Roy Shire at the height of Roy Shire. He went to work for Eddie Graham, and we all know about that. So he was in all the right places at the right times, and he really seemed to soak everything up. He took a little bit from everywhere, and he applied it to Mid-South Wrestling. And I'm so delighted they put up everything from 82. I mean, that's what a shocking turn of events this is, WrestleMania weekend.
And hey, no complaints here. I mean, Watts, he was obviously a brilliant guy. I mean, you talk about confidence. I saw an old clip from Florida Championship Wrestling where Barbara Clary's interviewing him, and he's hanging all over her. It was ridiculous, but he was confident.
Barbara Clary, where is she? Let's get her on the show.
She's a Spanish teacher in Florida.
Yeah, I heard that she doesn't want to do anything with the wrestling business anymore, so I don't know if I'd be able to get her on the show, but I may make an attempt. I know someone I could ask. So we'll see what happens there. But John, it is opening day, but it is also WrestleMania weekend, of course. And when you look back on the early WrestleManias, what are some of your favorite memories? What is your favorite WrestleMania?
Oh, man. You know what? It's got to be WrestleMania 3. It's got to be.
Me too.
Because, I mean, I understand that you have the Hogan and Andre match, which I know the Wrestling Observer crowd didn't love. But, I mean, it was the dream match. Everyone wanted to see it. And then you had the Steamboat Savage match on top of it, which was, I think, one of the all-time greatest matches of all time. And I think has become criminally overrated over the years. And it was one of those – I think it was the first show I've ever seen where every match meant something. Like the opener was Morocco and Orton against the Bees, right?
No, against the Can-Am.
You are correct, against the Can-Am. That's a big match, and it was deemed the least important.
You know, that's the thing. I posted that the other day on your wonderful group, the best Facebook group on the internet. The best wrestling group on Facebook, I guess is the best way to say it. I love that group, and it's the only one I really actively participate in.
Well, thank you.
And we were talking about WrestleManias, and I said WrestleMania 3 is one of the rare shows I could watch from beginning to end complete. Like, Bash 89 I love, but honestly, if I'm going to watch it, I'm going to fast forward past Bill Irwin versus Brian Pillman. I have no interest in watching that at all. WrestleMania 3, even the matches that wouldn't traditionally be good, I watch because it's such a spectacle. The arena, especially before it got dark and it was so bright in there. And you just see how deep the crowd is. And I love Jesse Ventura and Gorilla Monsoon. Although Gorilla Monsoon, if you watch the beginning of the six-man, the Hart Foundation and Danny Davis versus the Bulldogs and Tito, he misuses the word literally, 5 times in 30 seconds. He's like, and Danny Davis literally stole the belt from Tito Santana and gave it to Randy Savage and then literally stole the belts from the British Bulldogs and gave it to the Hart Foundation. He just uses the word literally over and over and over again.
My theory has always been, I've always heard that Monsoon is a very intelligent guy. He was one of the few guys in the wrestling business that actually had a college education. And my theory has always been that was him kind of giving us the middle finger.
I never thought of it that way. That's interesting.
I really believe that. I think, you know, he's one of those guys from the old days that you know, who says anyone who watches this is a stupid rube and I'm giving him the finger.
Well, I think WrestleMania 3 is just the height of him and Jesse. They're so good together. And, you know, that was the one weird thing. Jesse with Vince would always really rip on him and get on him and get on his wig and, you know, make all the comments. But with Monsoon, even though Jesse was a heel and he leaned heel, there was like a respect there.
Yes.
And it was a really interesting dynamic. And I love them. I love Jesse and Monsoon more than Bobby Heenan and Monsoon. And I know to some people that's maybe crazy, but I really truly think that Monsoon and Ventura are the better pair. And again, that whole spectacle. I mean, from the ring cars, taking people down to the ring, to just everything. And, you know, you said every match means something. You have Billy Jack Haynes and Hercules. That's the one. Everyone kind of comes out in a positive light, except Billy Jack Haynes is covered in blood after getting hit by a chain. He's the one guy who comes out looking like a scrub on that show. And I remember, you know, that was the one thing when they had the original version as it aired on pay-per-view. It ended the show with Aretha Franklin, Who's Zoomin' Who? A music video of all the highlights of the show. Still frames. I mean, it was pretty primitive. But everyone is shown like a positive thing. And then just Billy Jack Haynes like on the ground, making a grimace with like blood all over his face. I always remember that.
You know, the WrestleMania, you think about WrestleMania 1, 2, and 3. And WrestleMania 2, it was such an incredible outlier because it was so bad. And it was so poorly put together. They had it on a Monday night. It was, you know, no one really cared about it like they cared about 1 and 3. I remember, you know, I ordered it. I think I had two people over and we hung out and we watched it. The next year for WrestleMania 3, I literally had 25 or 30 people crammed into my apartment watching that show.
Did you go to closed circuit for WrestleMania 1?
Yes, I did. We went to the Worcester Centrum, which holds about 12,000 people, and there were about 10,000 people in there. And I quickly did the math. I'm like, okay, if they get this in just 20 cities and then 5,000 in another 20 cities and it's all for one show, no matter how much money they put into this, they've got to be making money.
Yeah.
That is the number one thing in wrestling I kick myself about. I had the opportunity to buy two tickets to go see the event live for $40 each. And it's easy to get to Madison Square Garden from up here. You just get on Amtrak and you get off Penn Station and Madison Square Garden's right there. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I already spent $12 on my ticket for the Centrum.
Yeah, that was worth it.
Don't listen to me, anybody, ever.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's continue this conversation, but let's add someone into the mix here. Let's see if this gentleman is home. I won't say who it is in case he's not. Typing in his name. Add people. Hello.
Hello. Hey.
Michael Elgin.
Yes, how you doing?
How's it going, man? Welcome to the Super Podcast.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's going good.
Say hello to John McAdam. John McAdam's on the line, too.
Hello, John. How are you?
Good, Michael. How's it going? Nice to meet you.
It's going busy and hectic, but I'm alive, so that's all right.
Yeah, how many shows are you working exactly this WrestleMania weekend?
10, and I just finished number 6.
Wow. When did you start? Thursday?
Yeah, Thursday evening, and then I had 3 yesterday, and this is my second one today.
Wow. Is it at all overwhelming just kind of being in that city, let alone all the matches you're working, all the shows you're on, but just being in that city, which has just become wrestling central for the better part of a week?
Well, it's not really overwhelming because at the end of the day, I'm looking at it as money. So,
yeah,
you know, this weekend's just such a big money maker that it allows me to kind of have some free weekends moving forward just because there's so much going on here. You know, you got merch selling every show and 10 shows in the weekend, so it just ends up kind of putting some money in the bank so you can take some time to relax some weekend. So that's all right.
Yeah, that's actually probably the best way to look at it. That's the way Austin Idol would look at it. It's money.
So yeah, it's good.
You know, it's amazing what WrestleMania has turned into. I mean, like you said, Orlando for the better part of a week is pro wrestling city. I mean, 20 years ago, the WWF was having this thing at the Hartford Civic Center because it was cheap and it saved on production costs. And look,
yeah,
what it is
it's
now.
Really strange. Yeah, because so last year I was in Japan during WrestleMania weekend, and the year before, it was really only the bigger indie company. So you're looking at a Ring of Honor and an Evolve, and that was almost it. And now, WrestleCon had a super show, but now every company from everywhere is here. You know what I mean? Like today, I just worked for What Culture Pro Wrestling, which is based out of England, and yesterday I worked for RevPro, and they're based out of England. So it's really every promotion that has a buzz going now is just in wherever WrestleMania is. And there's so many shows. I'm doing 10 shows, but there's also a good handful of shows that I'm not even on. So you can imagine how many shows are actually going on in this weekend span.
That is insane, man.
It really is. I can't even imagine it. And, a few years back, I don't know what the status of this currently is. The WWE was insisting when they went to a town, I think San Jose was the example, that any municipality, any building that's owned by the local government would not be used for any competitive wrestling show, convention, event, whatever it may be. And there's so many shows there now. I mean, it sounds like no one was shut out of this thing.
Yeah, I don't think so. As I said, there is an insane amount of shows. There's a minimum of 2 or 3 shows running at the exact same time.
When you do this, how far in advance do you have to book your hotel room?
That's all taken care of. So I don't know when they booked it all. WrestleCon, they had brought me, they got my flight and got my hotel room and are just kind of collecting from all the other companies I've worked for. But the hotel we're at is where the WrestleCon shows are. So I'm sure they had a deal in place with there for the weekend to get X amount of rooms for all the wrestlers they were bringing in.
Yeah, they definitely got a group rate. But this is WrestleMania weekend. And, one thing I know about you is beyond being a great wrestler, a future IWGP champion, you are...
Well, I appreciate that.
Well, the rumor is when you win the IWGP championship, you will grab the mic and sing Going to Wrestling by Glenn Goza over the ring mic in Japan.
I will absolutely do that.
Going to Wrestling.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Hell yeah.
That's an oral contract.
Well,
this
is what's going to happen. If I'm going to win the title, you'll know because I'm going to wear out my 605 Super Podcast shirt. So that's the cue that you can know that song is coming on after I win.
All right. That's kind of
I won't wear it out in Japan until I'm about to win the heavyweight title. How about that?
Okay. But this is also, this potentially could go the other way. This could mean you'll never wear the shirt. ever in Japan.
No, I mean, I'll wear the shirt. I just won't wear it to the ring in Japan. How about that?
Deal. Okay, deal. We have a deal.
Okay.
We have a deal.
So if you see me doing my entrance with the 605 Super Podcast shirt in, then you know I'm the next champ.
Well, as I was saying, you are a big wrestling fan. You're someone who, you know, one of the reasons, correct me if I'm wrong, you like the Super Podcast is you have a real respect for the history of the business. You love classic wrestling. And when we look at WrestleMania weekend, and when we think about classic WrestleManias, what are some of your favorite WrestleMania memories?
Well, I think the number one would be WrestleMania 6, simply for the fact that that was a live experience for me, even at like the, you know, 3 or 4 years old, my parents had taken me there. So WrestleMania 6 is big to me because that was the first like live WrestleMania I ever got to go to. But kind of looking back, like, I mean, WrestleMania 3 happened right before I was born. So looking back at it, obviously, you know, Steamboat against Savage is a match that I think most kids who become a wrestler definitely look back and it's a fond memory of them. Also, you know, you can't deny the Hogan Andre, the body slam. You know, as a little kid, it was something that I didn't get to watch live, but, you know, all my family was older than me. So I kind of got the hand-me-down treatment. So all their videotapes, all their action figures and everything I was given to as a hand-me-down when I started, you know, wanting toys and everything. And then when I started watching all their tapes, obviously I was a Hogan fan. You know, I'm a 4-year-old kid. I think everybody that was at that generation at that age kind of liked Hulk Hogan. So WrestleMania 3 was a huge memory. 6, definitely, because I was there in Toronto. And then I would say the biggest one that kind of molded everything I wanted to be, even though I don't wrestle like that, was WrestleMania 10, the ladder match between Razor and Shawn, because right then was when Shawn Michaels became my favorite wrestler. And even though I don't really have a style like his, when I started training, I was doing all of his stuff, you know what I mean? Like I was doing the top rope elbow drop and super kicks and stuff like that, just because Shawn Michaels was my guy. So I would definitely put those up there as kind of my big three.
Let's talk a little bit about those. John and I were just talking about WrestleMania 3, just what a spectacle it was and how it is a card that I never get tired of watching. And it's interesting. I'm 37. So when I was a kid growing up, Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling was on every Saturday morning before Muppet Babies, you know, so I'd watch it. And I love that show, even though when you watch it now, it's a horrible cartoon. Whenever you want to go back and check it, it doesn't hold up like Rocky and Bullwinkle. It's just a horrible cartoon.
Yeah.
And because of that, I guess my father ordered on pay-per-view and recorded WrestleMania 3. You know, it's a weird thing because my dad's not a wrestling fan and I wasn't watching wrestling beyond that cartoon and having the figures, but he recorded it. So growing up, as soon as I became a really big fan in 89, I had that video there. And, you know, people who watched on TV remember there were commercials for Aliens and Ferris Bueller's Day Off coming to pay-per-view in the middle of the event. And there was also a long, long, long intermission. And like you said, and John, you remember in The Observer, Andre versus Hogan was given like negative however many stars, but no one was chanting boring. And if you were into the characters, you know, it was a perfect Andre match for that time. And it tells a story. And I actually liked that match.
You know, the thing is, like, technical ability did not matter in that match. At that time, in that place, with the wrestling fans that were paying attention to WWF, like Hogan was their guy, and seeing him body slam Andre and getting to that was the most important thing. Like it didn't matter what they did in the ring. It mattered what the story was told and how the people were invested in it. And they were invested in it. So you can't, I really feel that you can't, that's not a match that you, if you are to rate, you don't rate on work rate. You work on the emotion of it and the story it was told and how people are involved in that story. You know, and that's awesome, I think.
I was telling Brian earlier, I ordered WrestleMania 3, and I had literally like 25 or 30 people over at my place, and not one person was complaining about the quality of the match or the work rate or whatever when Hogan and Andre came on. It's like you guys said, when that body slam happened, the room popped.
Yeah, it's all who... It's all that, like, it's all how people are invested into a match. Like, if the crowd reacts, then how can it be a bad match? Like, sure, technically, maybe things are never going to be great with an Andre at that point in his career and Hogan, but if people are into it, then how can you say it's a bad match? I don't think you can.
No, you definitely can't. I mean, it's almost like if a good comp, I think, would be like Kiss, the band in the 70s and early 80s. Was it the greatest music in the world? No, but people enjoyed it and they paid money for it, and that's what counts.
Absolutely. Like, you know, obviously I wrestle a much different style, but, you know, that stuff was great because people were so emotionally invested into it that you could get so much out of so little, and it made it easier to get caught up into it. And now everybody knows what's going on. And with that, it's like you have to do stuff that people go, oh, I don't know if he's okay from that, rather than, you know what I mean, the basic stuff where we could get caught up in the emotion of it. It's just a different time and society's different.
Yeah.
You know, and it depends who you're in front of it, how you can kind of make that happen.
Yeah, you had the ability to lose yourself in it. And
yeah,
that's one of the things.
I mean, you still can. Yeah, you still can now, but it was just a little bit easier there because even though people knew, they weren't outright told what pro wrestling was. You know what I mean? Like, I feel a lot of people knew what it was. It just, there was nobody sitting there saying, hey, this is a show.
Right.
Like, you kind of knew it was a show, but nobody told you it was a show, so you weren't in on it, even if you were in on it. You know, it's just a different time and a different thing. And, you know, it would be great to be able to go back and wrestle in that time where people had the believability and stuff. But I just said to, like, my students, because I run a school, I said, imagine if we had the believability of back then and the athleticism of now. Everybody would be making everything mean so much more because you had that believability. We have all this athletic gift, but we can create something a little bit slower paced and still get all that stuff in.
Regarding the believability issue, and Brian, forgive me if I've used this on your show before. I always go back to I saw Rocky III in the theater when it came out, and Rocky was getting beat up by the Russian, and then Rocky got that first good shot in, and the theater crowd popped. And they didn't, you know, this wasn't a documentary. Everyone knew it was a movie, but they got caught up in the moment, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, like, it's just so weird how different people act about that kind of stuff. Like, how they look at a movie now and they get lost in a movie, but there's some people that say they can't get lost in wrestling. Like, it blows my mind because I think they're so similar in how they're presented and everything that it's just so weird how, like, even, like, a major athlete, you know, they'll say, oh, that wrestling stuff's fake. Well, yeah, but a movie's fake. You're not going to run into Robert De Niro and say, hey, you're fake, buddy. You're going to say, oh, you're a great actor. Like, it's just so weird how people kind of put them in two separate thought processes and how they react to them when they're almost so similar that it's crazy.
I'm actually surprised someone would say that to you in 2017. I'm a little bit disappointed. Because 30 years ago, 40 years ago, like, the promotion played it off like it was real. And I could see someone saying, hey, it's not. But now, I mean, you know, come on. The WWF doesn't pretend – it doesn't claim to pretend that it's real. And
I just think people – you know, it's very few, but you'll run into some people that do MMA or are a football player or something, and they like to say that without – really knowing exactly what goes in, because, like, I've talked to people, for instance, Moose. You guys know Moose,
right? Sure, he works for TNA now.
I'm sure, and he was a football player, and he goes, man, this is rougher on your body than a football season. And I was like, yeah, man, it is, right? So, like, a guy who played in the NFL thinks that pro wrestling is tougher on his body, and people don't have the same respect. Like, no matter what kind of show it is that we're doing, man, like, the toll it's taken on ourselves, we put onto ourselves to have these shows is insane. And people just don't understand how much it takes out of people and just say, you know, for somebody to think how fake it is without really giving it the time of day to realize, well, you probably couldn't handle this schedule.
Right. How many football players have tried wrestling to quickly realize, I can't do this, you know? How many, yeah. John? Otis Sistrunk? Ernie Holmes, Walter Johnson. I mean, how many guys tried to make a run in wrestling and couldn't do it?
I don't mean to just solely, like, pick on football players. That's just an example because I'm close with Moose. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so much to it, and the people say that, you know what I mean? And it sucks, and, like, I wish they could, people could give it that, more people outside of the people who are attending shows and really support it, like, could just give it that thought process of, if I treat a wrestling match like a movie and get lost in it, then the magic is there, you know what I mean? If you're just treating it as, oh, that didn't hurt, get up, do something else, like, it's just totally different atmosphere, you know what I mean?
Well, with WrestleMania 6, you know, everyone obviously goes right away to Hogan versus the Warrior, but the match that actually stays with me when I go back and think to that event is Demolition versus the Colossal Connection, because when you watched it with the original music, Demolition may have the second biggest pop on that entire show.
Yeah. Yeah, no, like, that show, I think WrestleMania 6 is kind of underrated because some of the undercard matches were like, it's fun to watch, you know what I mean? And people just don't look at it like that for some reason. I think the same, it's almost like Canada got the short end of the stick because people don't look at WrestleMania 18 in Toronto either the same way.
Well, I mean, obviously The Rock versus Hogan is one of the more famous matches of all time, but...
Of course. Yeah. But then when you talk to somebody, they think, like, to me at least, like my students or other wrestlers, like, 6 and like 18 are kind of like people don't care about anything except like the two big matches, which is weird because like some of the stuff was really good.
You grew up outside of Toronto?
Yes, I did. Just about like 30 minutes outside of the city.
Obviously, it's a famed wrestling city, the Maple Leaf Gardens, the Tunnies. And by the time you were born, by the time you were into wrestling, it was the WWF's town. And it's always been known for having a hot crowd. You know, the WWE may not always like where the crowd is going, but it's always been a hot crowd. How would you describe being a Toronto fan?
You know, it was weird. So like wrestling only came there ever so often when I was born and stuff, you know what I mean? So I kind of missed the glory days of everything in Toronto. You know, I think it was not till 96 till we started getting like regular big house shows and stuff again. So it's kind of weird, but I think just as a whole, Toronto fans are so passionate about stuff. Like, I went to a playoff Raptors game, like, last year when they had made the playoffs for the first time in a while. And the crowd was just insane even for that. And when the Jays made the playoffs, they were insane for that. I just think that Toronto's so passionate about anything, you know, that's sports or entertainment, anything that's like that, just the crowd that comes out to those places is just insane, and it's nuts how lively and active they are with everything.
One of my favorite matches of all time took place in Toronto. It was late 1986, and it was the Honky Tonk Man against Mr. X. Now you're sitting there saying,
what?
Wait a minute, one of your favorite matches of all time. They were pushing Honky Tonk Man hard as a babyface. And this match was in Toronto, and they literally booed his every move. Everyone, check that out on YouTube. I mean, they could not edit out the crowd noise booing Honky Tonk Man out of the building.
It's the same reason I love that C.V. Afi match from the Garden. Every single thing he did, every babyface spot, the boos got louder and louder and louder because it wasn't Snuka.
Beautiful.
Well, you know, this is opening day Star Wars, Mike, and, you know, you just mentioned the Jays. You are from Toronto. I'm guessing I know your answer, but you never know. Who's going to win the World Series this year?
Man, I can't answer that without saying I want the Jays to win. But I don't know, man. I mean, I think if the Cubs play like they played last year, they have a good chance at winning again, but you never know. You know, I'd like it to be Jays, of course, or even St. Louis. I can go to a couple games because in 2014 I went to Game 7 with Kansas City against the Giants. So I'm a baseball fan, and nice. Going to another World Series would be nice. But I mean, obviously, I hope for the Jays, and I'm happy because April 26th the Jays are actually in St. Louis. So I'm gonna go be able to watch them in St. Louis now where I live. So that's gonna be good.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so I'll mark that down as another check in the column of the Mets, I guess.
Okay. Who are you taking, Brian?
I'm going with the Mets, and I really don't think it's too crazy. If you had asked me this 5 years ago, I would have said the same thing, and it would have been crazy. But the pitching staff, Cespedes is going to win the MVP. That's my pick right now. I'll say it in advance of the season. And I just think we got a killer lineup. We got a good bench. We got some good guys in the minors, and we have the best pitching in the league, if not in baseball. So I think, you know, it's hard to repeat. So it's going to be hard for the Cubs to repeat, but I think the Mets are going to do it this year.
It is hard to repeat, but do you remember who repeated?
The last team that repeated?
Maybe not the last team, but you know that Jays have repeated.
You're back to the Jays, I see. Okay.
So
that's right, 92 and 93.
Yeah, and they were the odds-on favorite for 94 if that strike didn't happen. So they should have had a three-peat. At least I'm marking that as a win for the Jays. So they're actually 1-3 years in a row.
You know, it's funny you say that, because if you talk to people in New York, they definitely mark that down as a win for the Yankees. And I know people in Montreal think that's a win for Montreal. And that's, of course, the year that really killed Montreal baseball was the strike in 94. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they should go on strike more often. Everyone wins.
Yeah, I know. Everyone thinks their team won in 94 because of it. And I did want to ask you about WrestleMania 10, because you mentioned that Shawn Michaels Razor Ramon ladder match, which was a historic match. You know, at that same time, a lot of people forget, but Chris Candido and Tracy Smothers were doing a series of ladder matches in Smoky Mountain that were really, really excellent. Shawn and Razor was definitely a different type of match, and it was in a different league. And I say that someone who was friends with Tracy and Chris at that time, it was in a different league, and I was there. I was a kid. I was 14. I was at WrestleMania 10, and I remember, and I haven't experienced this ever before at a wrestling show, with each spot, every time, you know, someone fell off the ladder, every time something that you'd never, ever seen before in wrestling happened, me and the people next to me, who were people who worked with my dad, who were older than me, jumped up and were high-fiving each other, and there were other people doing the same thing, because we couldn't believe it. I mean, there had never been anything like that on a national basis, a ladder being used as a weapon, spots happening off the ladder. It was such a big deal at the time. How do you think that match holds up today?
Man, I think, you know, it's funny. I think it holds up great. Like, it kind of came full circle with that being one of my favorite matches, what made me really love Shawn Michaels and kind of turn the corner. And he was, you know, my current favorite at that time. And then I was chosen for the first ever ladder match in New Japan. And like, that was the first match I went back to watch of how they did things, because it was a singles match. So we didn't have a bunch of guys in there. It couldn't be a stunt show. We had to tell a story, and we still had to make it exciting. It was the first one ever. So like, I watched it a couple times to kind of just get a feeling for how they built their ladder match. And I think it absolutely still holds up.
John, what did you think when you first saw it?
I was blown away. I mean, like you said, there was nothing even comparable that a national promotion did that would touch that ladder match at the time it happened. Well, I mean, what would even be in second place? I can't even think of that.
You know, again, it's a different type of match. So it's hard to compare it to Flair Steamboat, Flair Funk, Savage Steamboat, or anything, you know, of that ilk of a great wrestling match or even a great brawl. You know, the point that Mike just said, I think, is interesting. When you think of all the TLC matches and all the tag team ladder matches, it's set up so that there's no down point. There's a spot, and then the next guy's ready to set up the next spot. So whenever one person's down or two people are down, someone else is ready to do something. But with the Razor and Shawn Michaels ladder match, you didn't have that. Spots, you know, it took a little while to set up. It took a little while to build back up. And then there was the pop and the bump again.
I'm sorry, that's a classic case where less is more.
Yeah.
When you're just having spot after spot after spot, the spots don't mean anything.
Yeah, and, you know, I understand it with the now, like even more so with, because if you even go back and watch like the first tag team ladder match with the Hardys and Edge and Christian, like that was a little slower. And then they went into the first three-way and that was a little slower. So I think as time's going, you know, I really truly think, not just as wrestling fans, but every day, you know, people just don't have the same attention span. So they make those just a car wreck. So people are constantly eyes on the action, because I think that's why they're trying to make rules for hockey, for baseball, for football, to make it move faster, just because the people's attention spans are just not as long as they used to be. I really think that, you know, because everybody has such easy access to everything. You want to look at something? Oh, I don't have to wait to get home. I don't have to wait for a newspaper. I can pull it up on my phone right now. So I just think people's attention span is so much shorter. and they want to be instantly gratified because you can in so many means of life that's why they're car wrecks now. But I think it did take a while to get to that kind of car wreck ladder match. I really do.
I think one of these days, and I'm going to sound like a very old person when I say this, the day is coming where someone's going to get hurt really bad in one of those ladder matches. There's no need for the risks that these guys are taking. They won the war 16 years ago.
Okay,
I think there's just going to be a wake-up call coming up.
As a wrestler now, I'll tell you why they take those stunts. When are those big ladder matches usually on?
Early in the show.
But they're usually on WrestleMania, right?
Right, right, right.
So everybody wants to have that moment where people are talking about them in the biggest show of the year for pro wrestling, not just WWE. Like, that's the biggest show. No matter what anybody else tries to say, you know, there's no other show that goes somewhere and the whole world comes to that city so that literally everything comes there. You know what I mean? Like, cities are bidding on WrestleMania because it's so huge. Like, they just want to be remembered from WrestleMania. So that's kind of why I think they do those things, even though it's not so much the competition to, WWE's number one. I think it's a competition between the wrestlers that when WrestleMania is over, they want people remembering them. And that's just from a wrestler standpoint. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm on a show, I want to be able to give the fans a reason that when they leave, no matter what match I am, they think of me after the show. So I think with the ladder matches based on WrestleMania, everybody's thinking, okay, if I do this, that's going to make a highlight video from WrestleMania. And every time you think about WrestleMania 33, you think of my bump in the ladder match so that they're constantly on someone's mind so that hopefully rises their stock within the company. I think that's where it's coming from. Like, I understand what you're saying about that, you know, they have no money to beat and somebody is going to get hurt because somebody is going to get hurt. Ladders, no matter what they do with them or anything, there's always a possibility for somebody to get hurt, even on something simple. Like, Joey Mercury destroyed his face on a rather simple ladder spot, even though no ladder spots are quite simple. But out of what it has become, it was definitely more simple than the most things of it. I just think that people just want to be remembered because that's kind of what it is about wrestling. You know, you got to make sure people are talking about you, which creates more opportunities, creates more bookings. And, you know, that's kind of how you get to where you want to get.
I agree with you 100%, and I see where you're coming from. This is where Vince McMahon or Triple H has to step in and say, guess what? You're not doing that.
Yeah,
because guess who's going to get sued if the guy breaks his neck, you know?
Yeah.
All right, well, moving on from that.
I'm sorry that happened.
Listen, Mike, I'm really curious. So I know you listen to the show, and I know that you're a fan of classic wrestling. We have an idea of how old you are from what you've been telling us and what shows you went to. But when did you start really getting interested in the history of wrestling and the stories about the past? And what classic wrestling do you enjoy watching?
Okay, well, I can give you the exact timeline. I met a kid down the street. His mom was friends with my mom. Our connection was wrestling. We both loved wrestling. I'm sorry. I'm in the hallway of the show and it just ended. So people are coming. There's going to be a little bit of noise. But so we were both wrestling fans. That was our connection. That's what made us friends. WWEF was the only company we got on pay-per-view. He got a satellite dish, which then got WCW. And it was the Great American Bash 1992. So I saw Hase and Hashimoto, and I saw Steve Williams and Terry Gordy. Right. And they blew me away because it was just so much different than the WWF I was used to and was so much different than the WCW guys on Great American Bash 92. So that blew me away, and instantly me and him started looking in magazines to find these names. And in the magazines we used to get in Canada, I'm certain it was the same in the States, there would be at the end of the page, it was like a mailing a phone number to call, and they would ship you a catalog for wrestling tapes. So we would then we got the wrestling tapes, looked at all the match listings, found these guys in Japan, find these guys in other territories, and we started ordering tapes. So at like one point we got, you know, obviously stuff from Japan, and then Dr. Death we saw was in Mid-South. We got some Mid-South stuff, and then we saw, oh, Terry Gordy was in WCCW, so then we got some WCCW stuff. And we started watching that. So those were the first two things I started watching. And then in 95, when Smoky Mountain came up to do WWF, then we found out about Smoky Mountain and had to find Smoky Mountain stuff.
It's funny. That's pretty similar to, you know, my story in terms of you would find wrestlers you really liked, you'd get the magazines, you would learn a little bit more about them and about other people, and then eventually when you found tapes, you would just seek out everything with that person and discover other people you started to like, other promotions you liked, and before you know it, you're just, you know, filling your life with professional wrestling.
Yeah, I moved to the States and I still have boxes and boxes of my old wrestling tapes at my parents' house in Canada. Because we literally taped everything. Yeah, we literally, not only did we get all that, like I would tape, we would tape Raw, we would tape the Superstars on Saturday. CMLL was on the Latin network in Canada on Saturday, so we would tape that. And then, you know, when SmackDown and Thunder came out, we would tape that, and Nitro, and every TV show we could find, we taped. So we taped all that, plus we taped all the pay-per-views, plus we collected all the wrestling from Japan, plus we collected all this stuff from WCCW, Mid-South, Smoky Mountain, like all that kind of stuff. So we just went crazy and had a little bit of like everything. And of course, I have every major All Japan tape from like, you know, 89 to like 98.
Wow, that's a great period of time too. Well, what did you think of Mid-South when you first saw it?
I loved it. It was funny because I remember I was so used to the Million Dollar Man and I was so used to Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and then seeing their feud in Mid-South, I was like, holy shit, this is so much better than what they do in WWF. Like, even as a kid, I kind of saw it, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't a long time until I started liking guys that could wrestle after, like, I still like Hogan, but I remember I really liked the Bulldogs, I really liked Savage, I really liked Steamboat. Like, I started liking a lot of guys that people didn't, like, they kind of liked but didn't really speak about, and because Hogan was so big at that time around my age. So, like, I was always big into those, like, the guys who could kind of do more in the ring, even at a young age. So when I started watching Mid-South, I thought it was amazing. I thought everybody was so good there.
Michael, let me tell you something. You won yourself a fan. I love that story. I love the fact that you're in the business, and now I want you to win the IWGP title, like, really bad.
Oh, thank you.
It's so cool that you're not some guy that, you know, oh, I met a wrestler in the gym, and he said I could make a lot of money doing this shit. It's like, it's part of who you are. That's great, man.
Yeah. Like, it's a really cool, really cool everything. Cause like, so my mom's friend's uncle or second uncle wrestled as Irish Jack. And he used to show me posters of all these old shows he used to do around Canada. You know, with like Whipper Billy Watson and all those guys back in the day. And it was just like, I used to come home from school, like my school was a couple blocks away and then he was one block away from my house. So every day after school, I would stop by his house and sit on his porch for 2 hours and just listen to stories, him telling me about his wrestling days and go through his old books of pictures and posters and stuff. It was awesome. Like, I've always been a huge fan. And I think anybody that says they're not a big wrestling fan is a liar. You know, they don't want to admit it. Like, I have the entire WCW Galoob action figure set on my wall at home. I have old like Japanese figures on my wall at home. I got almost the entire Hasbro set on my wall at home. Like, I love wrestling and that's why I'm a wrestler. There's no doubt about it. Like, one time, my all-time favorite is Kenta Kobashi. My number two favorite is Shawn Michaels. And I waited my first G1. Kenta Kobashi did commentary at one of the G1 shows in Korakuen, because he's like does it with Asai TV, and I waited for 2 hours after the show because he was doing media stuff just to wait and take a picture with him. Like, I'm a huge fan of wrestling, that's why I do this.
Awesome, man.
When you're in Japan, you know, loving wrestling history, do you have time and have you had a chance to go around to some of the stores that still exist and get old magazines or check out some of the cool stuff from the past that's available?
Oh, absolutely. One of the stores actually buys our gear to sell. So every time I go in, I'll sell it. I'm like, hey, can I get a couple things as a gift? And I'll grab some old magazines or some old, you know, All Japan figures to put on my wall or something. So I'm absolutely into all that stuff. I love going to those shops and going to the restaurants. I actually went to Kawada's noodle shop.
Huh, really?
Yeah, he owns a noodle shop. And he's the cook, man. He cooked my food. And then I told him I was a big fan. He came out to the table and talked with me. His food was great, too.
That's crazy.
Is that for true?
Yeah, yeah. It is for true.
I want you to do that. After you win the IWGP title, I want you to get on the mic and say, it is for true.
I will. We got a deal. We got a deal in place.
This is the best negotiation I've had all day. This is really good. This is going well. Well, when did you discover the Super Podcast? I am curious.
Okay. Well, the friend that I actually mentioned, talked about that I grew up with, I should actually say his name is Jeremy Landry. Because he loves your podcast. So I said, hey man, what podcast do you really like? Like, I'm running out of stuff to listen to. Like, I listen to some wrestling like Joe Rogan and stuff. And he goes, I absolutely love the 605 Super Podcast. So I was like, all right, I'll give it a listen. And then I downloaded it, and it was one of those long road trips. And, I listened to it and then just got hooked. And then I started going back and listening to all the back stuff to lead up to now. So now I'm finally caught up.
Do you have a favorite top 10 character?
Man, I absolutely love Stutter and Tommy Rich. I love it. How he, I do. I love it when, I forget what episode it was, but I mean, he does it a lot, but this one was just a heavy one where he was like saying thank you to all the 605 Super Podcast fans. And then like 2 seconds later, he'd be burying them. And then he'd talk about calming down. And then, oh, so it's okay. I love it. Fuck those guys. 605 Super Podcast fans are shitheads or whatever he's saying. It was just, that cracks me up.
Yeah, we got to find out where he is. See if we can get him to come back to the show. Maybe I could talk to Tom Robinson about that. Oh man, that's so cool. It makes me happy to know that when you're on those Japanese trips, you have the show there. Just because the 4-hour show format may work best if you're traveling from town to town.
Definitely, some of those bus trips can be terrible. Yeah, I've literally absolutely caught up with everything now. So I just wait for the next one to be released so I can listen to it.
Well, this one will be out tomorrow or Monday. I haven't decided yet. And then I'll announce right here, next week's show scheduled is Tom Robinson in the co-host chair. And then I have a long conversation, a really good one, with Barry Rose, talking about the WFIA, talking about Florida wrestling, and talking about his upcoming event with the Assassin. As well as an interview with Brian Greenberg. A lot of people probably don't know that name. Brian Greenberg was the director of photography and one of the producers of I Like to Hurt People. And he has a really cool project where he's trying to reissue the movie, I Like to Hurt People 2 with bonus features. And we're going to get some really amazing stories about the Sheik, about Detroit wrestling, about Andre the Giant, and about putting together what is a cult classic. I mean, beyond wrestling fans, a lot of people who are just into, you know, cult films really like I Like to Hurt People. Mm-hmm. So all of that and much more this week on the Super Podcast.
Oh, I definitely have the corner store by me went out of business, and that was one of the first tapes I bought from them when they were going out of business, was the I Like to Hurt People.
That may have been the first tape I rented, or wrestling tape I rented, I should say.
There is, I mean, the music is suspect. But there is some really cool scenes in that film, some really cool stuff that they shot when people were filming stuff for TV. They were just next to them with a 16mm camera filming it for their movie. So you get all that cool stuff of Abdullah Farouk and Eddie Kreachman, the Funks, Dusty Rhodes. There's all that shit.
That Dusty interview was phenomenal.
Yes. Yes. That in the studio. So, I mean, again, that was something that it was on TV and for the best of my knowledge, doesn't exist anymore beyond that film. So the film is the only place you could see that. Unfortunately, the film is also the only place you'll see about 15 minutes of Captain Ed George in action. So that you have to live with. But other than that, it's a really, really cool film. How often do you encounter some of the wrestling greats in your journeys in wrestling, Mike?
Not too much. Like, I just did What Culture Pro Wrestling, and Jim Cornette was here. WrestleCon, of course, there's a lot of guys. There was like a battle royal last night with quite a few. But really, it's just kind of conventions like this, because I'm doing, you know, the shows I typically do are just more of like the indie style big shows. So they don't really bring in, you know, some of the greats from the past, but I really look forward to these type of weekends because all these conventions bring in so many guys. I was upset. I think I missed Stan Hansen signing because unfortunately I've never actually run into him, and he's another one of my favorites. So I haven't yet to run into him. I'm hoping that he's still here signing so I can try to run into him.
He appeared with New Japan a few times. I guess you weren't there, right?
Yeah. Because he had come in to do some promotions for Wrestle Kingdom, my first one I did, which was Wrestle Kingdom 10, and I wasn't full time at that point. So when he came in, I wasn't on the tour. So
I'll tell you what, guys, before either one of you has to go, let me add another person to this opening day Star Wars spectacular. Let's see if this works, because sometimes it doesn't. Let's see. I'm going to type in the name. I will press the name. I will press add to call. And let's see if this works. It is ringing, I assume. Guest, are you on the line? Hello? Tom, are you there? This is a disaster. It shows that he's on the line. We've actually made multiple attempts to get Tom on the line. Yo, I'm here. Tom, we can't hear you. If you could hear, he just messaged me, yo, I'm here. We can't hear you, Tom.
Well, speak up.
Speak up. Yell.
Yo, yo, yo. What's up? What's up? What's up?
Did you hear that? Let's see if he could type fast enough that I could get this quick on the air. Yes, he heard that. Is there anything wrong with your phone? Have you accidentally hit mute with your ear? Yo, yo, he wrote. Okay.
I'm sorry that happened.
Tom? What the hell's going on? Multiple people are now messaging me.
Well, this was going really good until you decided to not be able to call someone in.
Yeah. Tom, I'm going to hang up on you and try you one more time. Hang up on Tom. And
this is the second time we've gone through this, just so you guys know.
Do you want somebody to say hello first?
Who's that?
Oh, well, I was going to, he's on the go, so.
Oh, okay. I guess not then.
Maybe in a second. Now I messed up.
This will go down in the annals of history as the worst episode of the Super Podcast. Hold on one second.
No, it's the best. It's the best because this is my debut on this, and then everybody's going to be anticipating when I get the guest host chair. How about that?
That's right. That's right. We have to set that up.
Okay, good.
I look at it this way. Some episodes got to be the worst, right?
Tommy, you there?
Well,
are you a pussy?
Tom Robinson is now on the line. Tom, say hello to a couple people you may never have met before. One is named John McAdam, and the other is the future IWGP heavyweight champion, Michael Elgin.
Get the fuck out. What's up, guys? How you doing?
Hey, TR, what's
going
up, man?
Oh, these surprises, Mr. Last. What's that angle with the four flat tires?
Austin Idol and the Freebirds.
Yeah, I had a similar thing just happen. That's why I'm late. I apologize. Michael Elgin's on the line?
Yeah, really, is it?
I am.
The man gave me his word.
No disrespect to my friend John McAdam or TGBL, but Mike's got like 80 shows in like 2 days, right? So,
yeah,
how you doing, Big Mike?
I'm doing good. Here, somebody wants to say hello.
Who the fuck is this?
Who's this?
This is...
Who the fuck is this?
Yo, 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 what's up, what's up, what's up?
This is Funk. Are you a sissy?
Quiet for a second, Tom.
Oh,
who is this?
Oh, God.
Oh, is it Corny?
Brian, who the fuck? You talk to me every goddamn week.
Are you a sissy?
I'm about to fucking get out of here before I tell everybody what I think of the show that I just saw. I want to say I love you.
I love you,
hey,
too, Jimmy.
Jimmy. I'm going to get home probably late Tuesday night. And we will record sometime on Wednesday. When I get out of the hotel that I'm in with the shitty Wi-Fi, I'll email you and we'll figure something out. This has been a goddamn exercise in sleep deprivation and fucking aggravation. And I'm about to flip, so I'm fixing to load my car in this 97-degree heat and go have the first food I've had since fucking 2 o'clock this morning.
You know we're recording right now.
Jim Cornette, really quick.
I don't give a shit. Who is this?
This is John McAdam. You were magic last night, sir. Magic. Congratulations. Thank you.
As I told Ric Flair one time after his Clash of Champions match with Luger, I stole the show, but it was petty theft. I'll see you guys later.
See you, Jimmy.
I hope that was worth it.
Wow, look at you. You definitely will be in the co-host chair now. You've pulled out all stops.
Okay, good.
And you've shown us some surprises. Hey, Tom, I want you to know something.
Yes.
Michael Elgin, who listens to the show religiously, when he's in Japan, the show is there as his friend. It means so much to him. He's a big fan of Stuttering Tommy Rich and misses him. So just keep that in mind.
I think we've located him, haven't we?
Okay, you see how easy it was to locate
him? Oh, yeah.
There's been some photographic evidence, apparently.
Oh, yeah, that's right. One of the listeners took a picture with Tommy Rich, and he's wearing a 605 shirt, so we have that now on the Facebook page. But, Tom, to continue with the theme so far, two questions. Who's going to win the World Series, and what is your favorite WrestleMania memory?
Who's going to win the World Series? Definitely not Philadelphia.
Let's just say that if you say the Jays, I will not be upset with you.
You know, I'm going to go to St. Louis.
No, that's okay. That's where I live, so we're good.
Hold on. How do I hang up on Tom again?
No. Tom stays on, you know, because it's funny.
Hey, Brian, can I answer those two questions and then go back to my place because I got people coming over?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I know you're on a short time limit. John, answer those questions and then we'll say sayonara.
Okay. Favorite WrestleMania moment. I am at the Worcester Centrum right before WrestleMania 1. And – you know, we're all just all buzzing around waiting for the show to start, and the lights go out, and the closed circuit TV goes on, and there was an absolute hush in the crowd. I mean, you could feel it. It was palpable. Just people were like, you know, everyone just kind of took a deep breath and like, oh my God, here we go. Everyone was looking forward to that show so much.
And then you got to hear Vince McMahon do a voiceover to the instrumental version of Easy Lover. Right? Isn't that how the
that
first
voice.
One started?
Ah, oh, my testicles are caught in a vice!
Tito Santana versus the Executioner!
That's by Earth, Wind, and You're Fire!
And who's going to win the World Series, John?
Well, you got to think the Chicago Cubs are the favorites. Not only are they so good, but they're so young, and their minor league system is so built up that they could obtain a superstar or two if need be. But I just have a feeling Houston Astros.
All right. Now I'm going to hang up on you.
Fucking Buster only.
The Astros are a problem,
Astros
too?
Astros were the wrong team to pick.
Wrong
hey,
team
I'm in Metro
pick.
Boston. I'm going with the Astros. So.
All right. Well, listen, John, thanks for being a part of this today. We'll have you back on the show pretty soon. But enjoy the rest of your day with all of your Legion of fans. Legion
Thank
of
you, sir. Dark Horse, Texas Rangers. Thank you for having me on.
Okay. See you later.
Bye-bye.
He just picked like eight teams.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
The Astros, the Red Sox, the Rangers.
But what was more disturbing is that he went through farm systems and so forth. He transformed into Peter Gammons.
He had two picks he could have picked. He could have picked the Jays or the Cardinals, and we were good. And then he decided to go off script, so I'm glad you hung up on him.
Tom, what's going on, man? I've been trying to get you on the show for a while. Now you're here. It's Michael Elgin and me and you. And what do you got to say for yourself?
That's a pretty good six-man tag right there. I'll tell you that. Now, I ran out to get a bite. That's why I was double-checking the time with you. And I thought I almost got my first yelling at by TGBL. I'm getting ready for that. But then my sister and mom, I'll tell you off air, but, you know, I had to help out, and I was rushing home doing about 90 miles an hour. I'm excited to talk to one of the new generation stars. I don't know what you guys talked about already, but how many shows have you already did down there, Mike?
This was number 6. I got 2 more today and then 2 tomorrow.
God damn.
Yep.
That's like my career.
Yeah. I worked as many shows in the last couple of days as Tom worked in 15 years. Oh, man. Well, when are you heading out of Orlando?
Monday.
You have a few days off before you're working again? You going back to your students, or what's your next plan?
Well, Tuesday, Thursday's class, and then I have shows Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Wow, you're a busy man. You're a very busy man.
Yeah, too busy sometimes.
I understand that more than most probably. But you've also recently started your own promotion, correct?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Let the listeners know a little bit about that. If anyone is in the area, they could check it out and support a friend of the show, Michael Elgin, and his new promotion. Let them know a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, it runs in Alton, Illinois, which is, you know, just outside of St. Louis. I run a wrestling school actually in St. Louis, and the area has kind of not been very strong with wrestling promotions. You know, there's some promotions, but they use guys who, you know, maybe way past their prime, and some other guys in the area from different schools that aren't quite ready to be on shows yet. So I just felt that we needed something in the area, one for my students to work, and just the history in St. Louis is so rich in pro wrestling that I felt we needed something. And when I got injured last year, I was home for a little bit, and I decided that finally I had some time to kind of coordinate everything and get it running. So we put all the wheels into motion and then had our first show in February, and we're on Twitter at GloryPro 2017. Our website is GloryProWrestling.com, and our next show is May 7th, and we're just adding a show for May 26th, and then we have one July 9th.
Any chance you'll be booking the Hangman?
You know what? I might have to.
He'll draw.
How about the Hangman versus TR Shock? We can put that together.
Yeah, let's do
it. I'm working out.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mike, I know you're short on time. Before you go, let me add one more person, and then you could drop off here. And
okay, sounds good.
Let's make this attempt now, and we'll definitely set up a spot for you to co-host in the future. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
I would love to.
Mike, you're a badass if you get cut off before I say that. Thank you for
being
part of us.
Oh, no problem, man. I absolutely love the show, and it definitely helps on those long trips to Japan and on the bus and everything. So it's been a blessing that I've my friend put me onto the podcast, and I've been able to listen to it. I've actually caught up to all episodes. You know, I got into it maybe probably about, you know, 6 months ago, and I just went through the whole catalog to catch up.
That's fucking awesome.
Hey Tom, you missed it earlier. He announced that if he wins the IWGP title, when he wins the IWGP title, he's going to grab the house mic and say "Sim Saba Simba."
I thought I was supposed to say that is for true.
quiet. I don't want to hurt Tom's feelings.
Oh, you son of a bitch. Fuck Budokan. I want some merch.
No. Brian Lass was right. That's what I was supposed to say.
Is that for true?
Well. Actually,
I've had so many shows and been hitting the head so much, I forgot what the deal was. Now I remember the deal, so that's what I'll say.
Actually, since it's Budokan Hall and Budokan, it should be, I'm sorry that happened.
Then I'm kind of burying myself as world champion if I say that.
Nah, you're going to kick ass, man. I've been reading.
Thank you.
I've been reading your workout schedule. It vaguely resembles mine.
And we have another guest on the line. Guest, reveal yourself.
How many times have I heard that before? Reveal yourself.
It's Scott Cornish.
It's me. Listener favorite, Scott Cornish. Yes, it's me.
Listener favorite.
Now, you in return must reveal yourself. It's like that scene in Eyes Wide Shut.
Well, on the line right now, we have Tom Robinson and Michael Elgin.
Hey,
Michael
Elgin.
My goodness. Wow. Terrific. Glad to meet you.
Boy, everyone's really impressed that you're on the show today, Mike. Everyone's like, wow, really?
Well, I think that's good then.
Yeah.
Scott did the same move that I did, just bypassed me like I bypassed McAdam. We went right to Mike.
Front runners.
I apologize, Tom, because as you know, without you, there is no me.
And vice versa.
Well, Mike has to go soon, but Scott, we're going to ask you the question we've asked everybody. Who's going to win the World Series, and what is your favorite WrestleMania memory?
Oh, my God. I'm going to admit right off the bat, to make a bad baseball pun, I don't follow baseball that closely. My family.
Oh, it sounds like he has a shitty connection.
But the Yankee. Me?
Yeah, you just went in and out.
Me?
Yeah.
All I heard was Yankee.
Sorry.
All right. Well.
Then you muted, right?
I heard the Blue Jays are going to beat the Yankees to win the World Series. That's what I had heard.
I heard my family are all Yankee fans, but I've really become a big Met fan. That's what I heard.
That is not what he said. He spoke of the Blue Jays. I just want to let you know that.
No. He said blue and orange.
I'll sacrifice a Blue Jay World Series for a Joe Carter assassination.
Jesus.
Why would you say that?
What the hell, Tom?
You know what? I take back Stuttering Tommy Rich being my favorite top 10 person now.
Okay? As well as you should.
You never talk. No. Listen, you never talk poorly about Joe Carter to a Canadian. You just can't do it.
Game 6 against Philadelphia.
Yeah, you remember that? I hope you do.
Yeah, I'm a Philadelphian. Yeah. That was heartbreaking.
It wasn't for me.
This will always go down as the day Michael Elgin ran into the Mitch Williams of the Super Podcast, Tom Robinson, right here on the air live.
No, the better team won that year. Better team won.
This definitely has to go down as one of the great inappropriate Tom moments of the show. Wishing Joe Carter was assassinated. That's definitely one of them. Doing a Buddy Colt impersonation for Austin Idol, but the impression he decides to do is Buddy Colt asking people to get into the airplane. That's another winner. Boy, several TLN segments.
There really are so many.
I'm due for an ass kicking soon.
Well, Mike, how are you on time? Do you have to run?
Yeah, I should run pretty soon. I got to get to that other show.
As I said before, I really appreciate you being here on the show today. I appreciate all you've done publicly to support the show. I definitely owe you one, and I really do appreciate it. And we're going to have you on the show soon in the co-host chair, so prepare yourself.
Sounds good. Well, if you feel the need to owe me one when you have that convention, let me be a part of it, and then we're even. How about that?
That sounds like a plan, and we'll take in a Met game.
Perfect.
Hopefully them beating the Blue Jays in interleague play, and we'll have a good time.
I've been to a Met game before, and I enjoyed it. So
there you go.
My thing used to be going into a town early or staying a day late and getting a ball game in when I was in town. So
cool. Listen,
I've been to a Mets game.
Before you go, I do want to add one more guest here who really wanted to speak to you. So just hold on 1 second.
You motherfucker, motherfucker!
You're now free to go. You're not free.
Okay. Take care, guys. Thank you for having
later,
me.
Later, Mike.
See you later, man.
Bye, Mike.
And it's just us now, here on the line.
Okay.
The dream team of the Super Podcast. Kurt was supposed to be on today, but Kurt went down with laryngitis, so unfortunately he's not.
I've yet to interact with Kurt other than via internet.
Kurt just doesn't want to answer any questions about that Afro photo.
Well, this has been a fun show so far. Surprise run-in from Cornett, which was a surprise to him.
Wow. Like,
so I guess we don't have to call his answering machine this week.
That kills my one-liner. I swear I was going to say something like, oh, is Cornett on the line? He's not busy this weekend.
Michael Elgin is working 11 matches this weekend.
That's crazy. I heard something about that. Wow. Well, that's great that he was on there. I know he's a big supporter and fan. That's very cool.
11 matches and the Super Podcast. Someone give that man a trophy, a medal, and a title belt. He has earned it, and he deserves it. But, you know, here we are, opening day Star Wars. I had McAdam on earlier. Scott, what is your favorite WrestleMania memory?
Favorite WrestleMania memory? I was just thinking about them and thinking about how after you get past maybe the 10th one, they all are kind of a blur.
I agree. Memories. I agree with that.
And only that I personally have attended 15 and 20. And the 20 was the one at the Garden where the main event was the triple threat with Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and Chris Benoit. And that amazing scene where horrifying now scene where Benoit and his family are, crying in the ring to end the show.
Hey, Scott.
And the goal.
Scott, this will show everyone how we're not really editing this episode. I'm having issues with your connection, with your internet. It's coming through a little choppy. I'm going to hang up and call you on your phone.
Okay.
All right. So stay tuned. I'm going to hang up on Scott Cornish right now. It wouldn't be the first time someone's hung up on Scott Cornish. Hold on one sec. Hang up. Tom, are you there?
I'm still here.
You're still there? Let me get Scott's number right here. Copy.
You can put it out. Nobody listens to the show.
I've had to bleep out numbers twice on these Star Wars shows. And let's now add this, and let's see if this works. I hope it works. Let's see. Scott? Nothing yet. What's up with you, TR?
Nothing much. I'm cool now that I'm back in the chair. But gonna watch the whatever that is tonight, NXT.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch that too. Should be pretty good.
I really enjoyed the Hall of Fame deal, and that's WrestleMania. I don't know. It doesn't look good on paper, but then it's usually better than it looks if it's bad on paper. So
it'll be interesting. It'll be a interesting thing. I don't know what happened to Scott here. Oh, now he's sending me a different number than the one I had. Hold on one second. Let me copy this.
He's getting some booty.
Okay, and we're ringing Scott as we speak. Let's see what happens here. Let's see if he picks up. He may not.
Well, Elgin left. So
the star power is gone.
Hello?
Scott Cornish.
That's me.
So what are you trying to prove?
Can I speak to Michael Elgin, please?
You know, it's funny. The Dennis clip just reminded me. Last night, Tom, Amy Lee hit me up after Jimmy's speech. And she just goes, that really brought back a lot of memories of hanging out with Jimmy and Dennis. And she put like a little broken heart emoji. And, you know, it is true. You know, it is for guys like us, it's a little different with Corny. Because everyone knows him, but we will always have that association of him with Dennis, him at Ribbit,
yeah,
him at those Dennis shows, and it's a little bit of a different thing for us, for guys like us, guys like, you know, Mark Caraluzzo, Rick Ratchet, anyone who was around those Dennis shows, we see Corny in a different way.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was I didn't get misty eyed or nothing, like I admitted I did during his match with Paul Heyman, but seeing Ricky and Robert out there and the whole deal, man, just at WWE 2017 and a word thrown around with a lot of I don't want to say smart marks, I don't know what to say because I'm one of them and whatever else, but they say whatever's relevant and get relevant and, you know, as their comeback. And I mean, if you're referring to like a Jimmy, he's been relevant forever because he's always had an audience and been in, whether it be podcast or, you know, reinventing with Smoky Mountain Wrestling and now WWE, the little spot, and he's going to be on the table for, you know, three, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, a couple of people said, I want to see, I don't know, fucking Leo Rush. Let's say Leo Rush. Instead of Goldberg, he's not relevant. Well, there's going to be about 60,000 people and about, you know, a zillion buys to see the old guy who's not relevant.
I saw their last ahead, WrestleMania Scott. Match in the Garden. And what a weird event that was. That audience, for whatever reason, had read too much about these two guys and decided they didn't like either one of them, and they just died out there. Had a real stinker. Couldn't care less either one of them. they both did okay, you know, following that WrestleMania 20 match, I should say. But how strange that people are really all these years later, everyone seems pretty amped up about seeing them now.
It is interesting, yeah, just the evolution.
Go ahead, bro.
I'm sorry, Tom. It is interesting the evolution of the smart fans. You know, when you watch WrestleMania 3, you know, there are no boring chants. Everyone's just into the spectacle, into the show. I don't know how many sheet readers, for lack of a better term, smart fans were in that crowd, but everyone was having a good time. And by the time you get to WrestleMania 10, there was a little bit of a change. I remember myself and several other people obviously thought Lex Luger was going to win the title because the Observer and the Torch had both reported that they shot something at a Superstars taping where I think they brought out Lex Luger to the podium and he was holding the belt and people thought that was okay. They're in advance filming something for the opening of the show. And then, of course, it didn't happen. And by the time you get to WrestleMania 20, Scott, like you said, that crowd all knew that both guys were leaving. And that's why they shit on the entire match.
Yeah. And then Austin has a bummer. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it's only gotten, sorry to say, it's only gotten worse with this sort of, you know, and I'm a hardcore fan that has followed it, you know, not like I used to, certainly. But, you know, the people are following it with this intense enthusiasm. It's just that social media has made everybody an instant critic. It's sort of, you know, everybody has to weigh in with their opinion and their review. They can't just lose themselves in a match anymore. but then sometimes that crowd gives themselves way too much credit. I can't count the times where smart fans have said things like, why are they bringing out The Rock? No one wants to see him.
Yeah.
Really, no one wants to see The Rock. Tell me more.
Yeah. Dig your hole a little deeper, you know.
Yeah. Undertaker, why do they drag out The Undertaker every year? Because everyone but you and your friends want to see The Undertaker once a year. But again, I had that intense enthusiasm, you know, in my time years ago, but I've never seen it like it is now. But to return to your earlier question, being at the Garden for WrestleMania 20 and seeing that main event, which now I can't really, there's no reason to go back and watch that match, but the spectacle of the match, it was a pretty damn good match and one of the best I've ever seen live. And the whole spectacle and everything, which was well orchestrated, but it was something to really sort of tug at your heartstrings. Yeah, you talk about getting a tear in your eye about something. The finish of that match and the win for Chris Benoit and the whole scene that played out. I know now you watch it now and you cry for an entirely different reason, but it was kind of masterful the way that they orchestrated that whole thing and the celebration, and to think of him and the family and him in the ring with Eddie. At the time, it was really something to see.
Were you with Greg by any chance?
No. Greg will go almost anywhere on earth to see WrestleMania, but he would not come an hour and a half or a couple hours up to the Garden. For some reason that year, no interest in seeing in Mania that year. I was all by myself, way up in the upper deck.
All right, well, I just want to confirm something I heard from Greg since you were there. And he wasn't. Did Benoit leave in a white Bronco?
Jesus. I can't.
That's his family. That's more your style.
I can't watch Benoit matches anymore. I just can't. And
there's no need to.
I was a big fan of his. And, you know, it was weird last night during the Hall of Fame. We're recording this on Saturday afternoon. During the Kurt Angle video presentation, you know, they show different clips and they show him doing the moonsault off the top of the cage on, you know, Benoit moves out of the way, but it's against Benoit. So for a couple seconds at most, you see the body of Benoit kind of moving away, and just seeing him in that video, like, turned my stomach. And it's such a, I shouldn't say it's a weird thing, because I think it's an understandable thing, but I can't watch that guy anymore at all.
There are thousands and thousands of incredible matches, angles, things that you haven't seen, things that you can go and revisit. And if you want to go back and watch a Benoit match, you certainly should. I just can't, and I don't see any reason to worry about it. You know, it's a horrible thing, and it just still is just unbelievable how that all happened. But yeah, there's thousands, if not millions, of things out there in the wrestling world to latch onto without having to watch a Chris Benoit match. Yeah, like I said, one of the greatest things, spectacles and matches that I ever saw live, and I'll never see it again.
Do you think Greg Greenland would ever come on the show and tell his experiences, talk about his experiences backstage at the WWF in the 1990s and his run-ins with Gorilla and stuff?
Possible. He's not shy about offering his opinion. I'll ask, or he'll hear this at some point, and he can consider that. I don't think he certainly passed the point where he thinks he might get a job there. That was always something he was hoping for and trying to do. And that's not going to happen. But he still may or may not choose to do that because he has friends here and there that he just doesn't want to shoot off his mouth, but he's not shy in offering his opinion. Who knows? He just might.
Greg would be an interesting guest, and to echo what Scott said, he's not shy about sharing his opinion, and it'll be just something like, I don't know if there was any interaction backstage with wrestler A or B or C, but if somebody's brought up that he doesn't like, he won't be like, fuck that guy, he sucks. He'll be like, I hope that guy dies in a house fire and suffers every moment till his skin burns off. And I'm damn, like, Greg in person is like the nicest guy in the world. And he turns into Satan when you bring up people he doesn't like.
I remember when he was around their shows a lot and he was backstage all the time. At one point, they put him in like a lab coat and they sent him out on TV as a doctor. And I forget who it was. Maybe it was Tatanka or someone. Someone got attacked, and it was like a brutal attack. I can't remember all the details. It was so long ago. But I'm watching TV, and there's Dr. Greg checking the guy's pulse. You know, the guy who had his head caved in, and he's checking his pulse. Oh, man.
He isn't a doctor, but he did play one on TV.
He literally did.
He was also an orderly, I think, when if I'm remembering the angle correctly, he and it might have been Kid Cash were orderlies when Goldust kissed Ahmed Johnson, and there was some kind of thing where Ahmed was knocked out and he became absolute dead weight, and Greg and the other hospital orderly had to tend to him. I don't know if that's the one you're remembering or not.
Yeah, I definitely need him on the show now to talk about this stuff. These are exactly the kind of stories we need on the Super Podcast.
let me tell you the one trigger name that you really want to
open the floodgates. You want to throw out the trigger name of former backstage guy and photographer Steve Taylor.
I've never heard I've never heard too much about him one way or another. That's like his arch nemesis.
Well, for many years it was. It just was a guy that treated him badly at a time when he was just trying to help out and make his way in. When he talks about Taylor, it makes TRNAC's Tony Gurria stories sound like Will Rogers.
All right. Well, now we have something to look forward to. I announced it earlier on the show, but Tom, you're in the co-host chair this week, which will obviously be out days after this episode. And also on the show this week will be a conversation with Barry Rose, talking about Florida wrestling, the WFIA, and his event with the Assassin, as well as an interview with Brian Greenberg, the director of photography and a producer of I Like to Hurt People. So I think a lot of people are really, really going to dig that stuff. I do want to make one quick plug here in the middle of the show if you're listening. Each week on the show, I tell you about the Amazon links, tinyurl.com/superpod, Amazon, and of course Prime, which is tinyurl.com/superpodprime. By using those links, you really help the show. You support the show by doing nothing more than you would normally do if you shop on Amazon. And, of course, with Prime, you get a free 30-day trial, cancel at any time. Along those lines, I would really, really appreciate if you guys would try Amazon's Music Unlimited service for the month of April. It would very, very much benefit this show if a lot of people tried it. And, again, just like Prime, you can cancel before 30 days are up, and it's no charge to you. But it really would help this show if you would do that. And the link for that is tinyurl.com/superpodmusic. tinyurl.com/superpodmusic. If you love this show, if you love the stuff that we're putting out there each and every week, sometimes weeks like this, twice a week, then please consider using this for the month of April for the month of April, signing up for a free 30-day trial of Amazon Music Unlimited really benefits the show. So please consider that. And now back to the arts.
And that's a totally different service than Amazon Prime?
Yes, seemingly it is. I can't give you all the details, but it's, you know, it's their streaming music service, more akin to, I guess, what Apple's doing, and maybe like a Spotify, than Prime, which is more like, you know, they have certain things in their catalog that they're allowed to exploit. But either way, if you try,
so you're able to. I'm just asking, are you able to check it out if you've already sampled Amazon Prime?
Yes, yes. And in fact, I encourage you to. tinyurl.com/superpod/superpodmusic. So please do that. But before we add what may be our last guest to this line shortly, you know, we've talked about a lot of things here today. We've talked about Mid-South Wrestling and the WWE. Did you guys both watch the Hall of Fame?
I did.
Yes. I was going to, you mentioned Amazon and the 605 respective links. I fucked up. You know, I drink a little bit sometimes when I co-host, and I sent a bunch of money to Beth Phoenix.
The Glamazon?
Come on. Thank you.
I'm surprised.
I was wondering if the mic was on.
Why did you save that joke for T-Arnak?
No, I got you too, Scott. I was just like bending over when I heard you do the mention by name, because she did mention every name in the history of wrestling. She, fuck it, I'll go there. She mentioned more names than Marty Goldstein.
All right. Well, on the topic of
I like that interview if you're listening, but there was a lot of names.
On the topic of the Hall of Fame, what did you guys think of Corny and the Rock and Roll Express?
I'll let Scott go.
I loved it. I loved it. He really, Cornette did not disappoint. I don't know. The audience seemed to be sitting on their hands during some of his presentation, because his thing couldn't have been more perfect. But I, you know, some people weren't laughing at some of his fantastic jokes when he threw out the thing about them going to the ring. I won't spoil it for anybody. And he had to clean that up a little bit. I just loved that, and I just thought, oh, that place is going to explode, and it got a good laugh. Yeah, he did a great job. I'm glad to hear about all the. I can't wait to hear the story about all the antics that are going on and the stuff that he did and that table for three. So of course he was fantastic, and I enjoyed their thing, their interplay with each other. Clearly they had something written out that went south for Ricky. It was hilarious at a couple of points where Robert is looking at the notes and trying to get Ricky back on board. But that better that way than to just sort of read a prepared speech. But it didn't come off as stiff or anything like that. I loved hearing Robert get a chance to talk.
He was funny. I mean, that was the funniest Robert Gibson's ever been on camera.
Who knew?
And the spandex was rather flattering to Robert, which Cornette pointed out.
Yeah, see, that was the line that didn't get as big a pop as I thought it would. Yeah. But
did you see when they panned the crowd, though? It was like some of those, I call them millennials. I guess everybody does. But, you know,
yeah, you
some
didn't
of those
invent
younger.
That term. Yeah, what I call them millennials. Everyone calls them millennials.
Well, I don't know if I've used that terminology on this show, but millennials/millennial wrestling fans. Go ahead.
I call them young whippersnappers.
that's actually more accurate, because it's more defaming, because it seemed almost like they had a built-in bias where if Cornette came out and did Richard Pryor's fucking first television special, some of them just wouldn't respond. You know, they had a built-in. If you look back and when they pan the crowd on, you know, everybody's having a good time, but there's certain you know, few in every row that are just like kind of folding their arms and making angry faces and shit.
The truth is, in the audience, not in the wrestlers and family and friends section, but in the audience, they can watch the show and they know that these are people to be respected that are being inducted into the Hall of Fame. But the majority of that audience, if you want to tell the truth, they don't know rock and roll and they don't know Jim Cornette.
That's what I was thinking too, because if you think about most of the other inductees, it's someone who's been on WWE TV within the last, you know, 15 years or so. DDP, sure. Eric Bischoff, yeah. Beth Phoenix, Teddy Long, even Kurt Angle. The Rock and Roll Express were the one, I mean, even when they were on WWF TV, it was very limited in the 90s. They are 1980s. Even though they did Smoky Mountain Wrestling in the 90s, they are primarily known for being that 1980s tag team, the quintessential babyface team from the 1980s. So,
with all due respect to your counterpoints collectively, if those said 25-year-old individuals, all male, by the way,
you can call them millennials.
I'll just call them individuals at this point, or whippersnappers is better. If they went out of their way,
trending soon.
Hashtag whippersnappers.
Hashtag whippersnappers. Get it going.
If they went out of their way and paid a nominal fee to see the Hall of Fame ceremony, they are historians, I would think.
No, three out of four.
Dennis surveys. Not historians to your level, Brian, but historians where they get on the network.
Maybe my level.
I believe that they knew exactly who all three people were, and I believe that some are just easygoing, love wrestling, good sports, and whatever was entertaining to them was entertaining to them, whether it be DDP, which wasn't entertaining to me because I've heard every interview between Bischoff and DDP like for the last 3,000 years about Spring Stampede. I actually posted it, and he quoted Spring Stampede in his fucking acceptance speech again. I'm tired of hearing that Macho Man story. Much looked up at me and he said, fuck you. Fuck you.
Well, you know what I've got to ask?
Just take your fucking award and, you know, nah. But anyway, well, this is WrestleMania, and I'm kind of off kilter because I thought this was In Your House memories. So,
Well, let me ask you this. They show that video of DDP before he got up on stage where he gets the phone call from Hunter that he's getting into the Hall of Fame.
There happened to be a camera there.
Does he film every phone call he has? Because that Jake the Snake movie, he's filming him talking to Jake. He's filming him talking to Scott Hall. Does he just film himself all day doing things, hoping that it'll be a moment?
Brother, when Dusty called me, somehow there'll be a film of Dusty calling him. But he has creative license now to say Dusty called him when he won the world title. But I would think that the tables might have been switched in that particular story, and he may have called Dusty. And I believe the rest of the story may be slightly embellished, but he's a wrestler.
Yeah, the other side of the Randy Savage story is that when he called Randy on Thanksgiving, Randy played the tape for his dad, and Angelo Poffo said, is that a mark?
I'll go one step further.
Go ahead.
I'll go one step further. I think DDP filmed his half of the phone call like last week. But the masterful magic of editing made it all look seamless, I'll say. Now, I'll say that I'm not a huge fan of his, not even a kind of a fan of his. I heard enough. You know, and people call him this and that, and DD me, and so forth. He deserves to be in. And I've heard enough things that he's done to help people, and I don't mean Jake and Scott and people like that. I just mean there's a local story about a serviceman that he came up here on his own dime and visited and helped out for a benefit.
And taped
came
it.
Up.
But go ahead.
I read about it in a Syracuse paper, and he came up here twice, as the story goes, on his own dime, and took care of this guy and helped out with a benefit. And you know, he's like
he's at that side like Mick Foley. He's done a lot for a lot of people. And on that basis, I'll say he earns, you know, he earns good guy points, even if I'm not a particularly big fan of his. I didn't mind his speech at all until it veered into the DDP yoga commercial.
Self high five wasn't just a tagline. He's giving himself a self high five literally 24 hours a day.
I think he forgot that last night. I don't think he even said it. Now I might be wrong.
Remember his early on, his catchphrase was, "Good God." And then he dropped that.
I saw him on an independent show. Saw him on an independent show in my hometown, Rome, New York. The same place where he later did a DDP yoga infomercial. The same arena, like 20 years later, that we talked about on the 605 podcast. But yeah, he was just sitting there. I forget where he was in his career. He sort of was after AWA. Maybe he'd been to WCW and was out or something, or on his way back. He looked kind of miserable and chewing his gum and doing all that. But everybody got to walk by and get free autographs. And I think I still have my program where he signed it. Good God, G-A-W-D, DDP.
You know, I'm watching him and he's so amped up and he's filled with energy. And I got to say, because there are going to be people who listen to the show like, I can't believe you're ripping on DDP. Well, we're not ripping on. We're just saying honest stuff.
We're just having fun.
But DDP yoga really...
He's going to be okay. He's going to be okay.
DDP yoga really is a great workout. But all I'm thinking when I'm watching it last night is he's so like filled with energy. We see how he is all the time. Can you imagine what he was like in like the early 80s when he was running nightclubs and he was all coked up? He must have been out of control, like so difficult to even talk to.
Well, I mean, sometimes that works in the opposite way. If you have natural, you look for the low and whatever. But anyway, not that I would know. But
I've heard the same.
I'll say that I rode in a van after a WrestleCon convention in Tampa. I rode in a van with a couple of fans that were at the convention. This was a shuttle van to the airport. And a couple of fans, Sabu, Dr. Death Steve Williams, and Kimberly Page. And that van took off at like 6:15. It was the first van going to the airport in the morning. And Scott Hudson said this too. He said, she looks flawless.
She is. I mean, she was.
Any time of day, and I can confirm that.
She has to, though, because she never knows when he's going to show up with a camera crew and just start filming her, like, going grocery shopping or, you know, going to the beauty parlor or whatever.
Brother, the snake was in my bathroom. I'm surprised that story didn't fucking leak out when they were trying to get him to go home.
Yeah, he didn't tell the Scott Steiner story in the middle of his speech.
Yeah. Now, to kind of be in the middle of the fence here, I agree what Scott said about, you know, his heart. I believe he's a good person. He separates business from maybe his intentions. He films a lot. He's done more good than bad, and his message is very, you know, positive. So, Congratulations, Mr. Page. And of course he did work his ass off to get where he got to. So, but one point I want to make is that I don't know if you noticed Shawn Michaels and Undertaker wasn't, visible that I saw in the audience, but, he has the NWO Scott and Kevin, and he won his world title from Flair, Hogan, Sting, Macho was involved, et cetera, et cetera. All these legendary names. Dusty was his mentor. But Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker still think he's a mark no matter what he does. they just do. I mean, you know, you guys probably remember better, but I was aware of it back then. The Undertaker had real...
That's true. That's true. I do know that for a fact.
Real, what's the word? It wasn't heat, but it was real.
He didn't want to deal with him. He thought he was a goof. When Dallas Page showed up and handed The Undertaker a script, The Undertaker was like, I don't want to work with this guy.
Yep, exactly. And Shawn Michaels is an Undertaker mark, kind of. What's wrong? What the hell is happening with his eyes? Like, they're getting worse.
Well, you know, I don't know, but I heard the story was that Shawn Michaels originally cleaned himself up because he didn't want Dallas Page to show up with a camera crew and confront him and tell him to clean himself up. I did hear that.
I heard something different. I heard it was his tribute to Robert Gibson.
Well, if that was
well done, Sean.
If that was just off the top of your head, that might be a top 10 moment in history. If it was written, it's still top 20, but that's awesome. Great joke.
What do you do when you get into a fight with him? Look at me when I'm talking to you.
Can you focus for a fucking minute?
He's always got his other eye going in many different directions to make sure Sonny doesn't sneak up behind him.
They've got to have Michaels, Jim Duggan, and Robert Gibson on table for three.
It'll be a table for six.
It'll be a six camera shoot.
They have to find the plates.
There's an awkward moment when the waiter comes up and any one of them goes, ah.
That's great.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so the Hall of Fame was good. Oh, man.
God, Shawn Michaels, in my opinion, the greatest in-ring worker. I know a lot of people dispute that, but he, in my opinion, was, and nobody will ever surpass him. Kurt Angle came close, and, you know, a lot of other people. I don't think Flair. I think Steamboat was closer than Flair, if I'm being honest, but that's just my opinion. Everybody's subjective, but I just don't know what the deal is with those fucking eyes, man.
That Rick Rude video they did last night, you know, I remember him swiveling. I don't remember him just thrusting his ass and his cock as much as they had in that video where he has different people's faces on his pants and it's just him like thrusting, like hard thrusting, humping the air. And that video was also the evolution of his perm, just, you know, from one to another.
You know what messed up and I wanted to check with you off air. I mean, I didn't have to check, but I didn't have time, but here's how out of touch I am with the past and my memory and so forth. He was a WCW world champion.
What happened was he won
What
had kind of been the NWA title, but it was after the NWA stopped recognizing the title in WCW. So it became, I think, like the WCW International World Champion. And then he lost it.
So it wasn't real. Man, so he beat like Candido on a dentist show.
Oh no! He didn't. He never beat. Yeah, he never beat
Candido. That was a joke.
Because actually, now that you say that, I think Dennis was trying to get dates when he joined the NWA. That was one of the big fights. Was Dennis joined the NWA and then expected, like every NWA promoter is supposed to, that he'd be able to book the world champion for dates, whether it's Flair or Rick Rude or whoever. And WCW wasn't having it. And that kind of caused a lot of the schism between the NWA as an organization and WCW. And that's why the NWA and WCW, you know, went their separate ways.
Wow. Speaking of schism, is Paige showing up at WrestleMania or
Dallas Paige?
No, I meant Bukkake Paige. I'll be here all week.
Wow.
Try the veal.
Bukkake Paige. Wow.
Paige is a Brit. I know this is going too current, but Paige is a British young lady who had sex with a lily white guy.
Someone say millennial.
And then a bunch of millennials and a black guy, and now she's married to a Mexican, or going to get married to a Mexican. It's just, I guess, we're all united from her porn.
I'm just going to let that
happen. Well, she certainly is.
I always suspect that she has smelly gear. But anyway.
God. Well, she's certainly the United Nations of
wrestling women.
I think it's a protest to the travel ban, but anyway.
Goodness.
Go ahead. Take charge, Brian Last.
But when all that stuff happened a week or two ago, I couldn't believe she was still with them. She seems to be running all over the place with
Birdie.
Dude, Alberto, you know, and just having one weird, bizarre, awful interaction or fight or whatever. And until I heard this story that they were filming some movie about her life, which I guess I'm not sure, is she in that thing? It's a fictional movie about her and her family.
Who is Vivica?
Well, no, you know what I'm talking about.
I know
about.
What you're talking about. That was my idea of a Tom Robinson joke.
I missed it. I thought you were legitimately clued.
I should have said Vivid Video now that I think about it.
Savannah Sampson, anyway.
Well, somebody that we mentioned earlier on the show was once wearing a T-shirt. Greg was wearing a T-shirt one time when we were visiting Ohio Valley Wrestling, and it was for really one of the nastier adult film companies called Anabolic Video. And they had their run back at the time, whenever this was, let's say 2000-ish. But he was wearing like Anabolic Video Crew, a T-shirt that he had picked up. And one of the biggest stars in the world of wrestling was putting the ring together. And he walked by with like a 2x4 in his hand on the way to putting the ring together. And he stopped and looked at Greg and said, "I know what that shirt is, and I like it. I like it a lot." And put him over in a big way, and kept going. You know,
was it Jim Duggan?
I thought maybe he might have said, "You can't see me."
He was carrying a 2x4.
He hadn't yet. Yeah, he hadn't yet perfected that catchphrase, but that's exactly who it was that put over Greg's shirt.
He's a California guy out there,
real
bodybuilder.
Real quick, guys, before we move forward, just I want to make a correction. Masachono won the NWA title tournament, the G1, where he got the NWA title, lost it to the Great Muta, who lost it to Barry Windham, who lost it to Ric Flair in July of 93. And by September of 93, the NWA and WCW had their falling out. And the world title, the NWA world title, became the International World Championship. And then Rick Rude defeated Ric Flair at that point.
As Captain Lou Albano used to say, get it right.
I got lost kind of in the middle because, you know me. But does that mean he was the world champion or not?
Yes, he was. And he absolutely
Because I had always had, you know, people saying who's the greatest worker that never had a world title. And there was, you know. Rick Rude was up there in the top of the list, but I guess I know he had the when he went to Texas or something, right? He had a world title, a
right,
version, right?
That was after World Class left the NWA. Every time someone leaves the NWA, Rick Rude gets the world title. After World Class left the NWA, Rick Rude became the World Class Wrestling Association champion.
It's amazing. I mean, as an old bastard right now, and I mean, Brian, you're a couple years younger than me, and Scott's a couple years older. Rick Rude died at 40.
That's something I've actually been thinking about a lot lately when I look at wrestler deaths. These guys that I always thought of as being so much older than me, you know, like even like Eddie Gilbert or, you know, Kerry Von Erich. Kerry Von Erich was 4 years younger than I am right now when he died. And that's just, that's really crazy to me, you know, because
I don't know any, what was he, 34, Bri?
I think Eddie and Kerry were 33.
Okay. I don't know any 33-year-olds. And, I'm not at the gym like I used to be, but I'm still in the culture that look like Kerry Von Erich looked, if somebody can decipher what I mean. But it's kind of echoing your point. Like, Kerry Von Erich was like this man at 33, and I'm still obviously a boy. Psychologically, but physically I'm a man or whatever, but Kerry Von Erich it's just so a different time, I guess. I don't see any 33-year-olds out there that remotely resemble a guy like Kerry Von Erich.
Hey, how about them referring to Ron Simmons as the first black heavyweight champion last night, the same night they induct Bearcat Wright into the Hall of Fame when he held the world title in like the early 60s?
True. And they did a video package, too, before, right? It was before that, right?
Well, they did a video package. And by the way, we may have to uncover some more information, because when they did Dr. Jerry Graham, they didn't talk about the Graham Brothers tag team. They didn't talk about Rocca. They didn't talk about any of the stuff we usually talk about. They talked about his days as the wrestling hypnotist with his Swami. So I think we're going to need
Never heard of that before last night.
Yeah, we're going to have to really, really dig in now and get more information about this.
In their defense, they also didn't talk about the stuff that we really talk about concerning Graham. Imagine that voiceover. If you're invited Dr. Graham to your house, be careful. when he hits the bathtub. I killed the
Yeah, that wasn't thing. Included, and that would be a great ending to the package. you just see a turd in a tub.
Oh, God. I'm sorry that happened.
Vince would like that. That's like Vince humor.
Yeah, Vince.
You ever realize Vince's humor may have all come from Dr. Jerry Graham?
Absolutely, and probably here now. He's probably a listener. You're getting popular there, TGBL.
We're in every locker room in wrestling. I kind of have an idea of a lot of people listen. I'd be willing to bet Vince McMahon's not one of them. I'd be willing to bet Vince McMahon. I'd be willing to bet Vince McMahon doesn't know what a podcast is. Exactly.
Who's
that?
Good point. Who's his tightest guy now? Pat Patterson's like kind of still there, but not really. Who's his guy?
Kevin Dunn.
Hunter?
Kevin Dunn.
Kevin Dunn, but he's as old as Vince.
That's Vince's like number one confidant. Hunter, to an extent, and I got to, you know, I've said it before, I got to really give Hunter a lot of credit. I think he's done a lot of right things. And when you look at the last several years of Hall of Fame and the company, and you look at all the reconciliations they've made, from the Warrior to Goldberg to Bruno, Cornette, that's all Hunter. You know, Hunter's the one putting all those things together. It's not Vince.
Yeah.
And, you know, that says a lot. It says a lot because he doesn't have to do that. You know, when he wanted to do Bruno for the Hall of Fame, Vince didn't care. Vince was like, if you want to waste your time, you can do that, pal. And Hunter said, okay, I want to waste my time. It's important. And
that's after many years of Vince actually making an effort before he turned that all over to somebody else.
No one says it, and I don't know if the story will ever come out, but I'll bet you, and I've heard some things, that every time they made the effort, I think they even sat down once together, Vince and Bruno. I bet it always came down to money. You know, I know we're supposed to think that Bruno's beyond, like, wanting money, but you know, I was retired. I was very happy with my family and working every now and again for Dick the Bruiser. And they said, Bruno, we need Bruno back in the garden. We need Bruno. We're selling out. It's not enough. We need more. We need more sellout. We need Bruno. And I said, oh, gosh, Johnny, I can't do that. I don't want to do that. I'm with my family. And they said, we'll give you 5% of the gate. And I said, what time's the show start? I'll be there. I mean, it's just,
I'll tell you.
And can I go off track here for a moment to I mean this in the greatest sense of, for whatever a great compliment for me is worth. I mean it quite sincerely, and I take great delight in it. If I'm somewhat known in this little corner of ours for doing bad impressions, I absolutely love your bad Bruno impression. It is my new favorite. It kills me.
Thank you very much.
Bruno is difficult. Bruno, like I even failed with that. If you do Dennis doing Dino Sana, you'll get close to Bruno.
Let's hear it.
I ordered a fucking pizza.
Awful.
By the way, Tom, this week on the show, when you co-host, be prepared. You're going to do the Tom Robinson Impression Challenge 1986 WWF.
I looked at it last night. I looked at it before, but I actually looked at it last night, and I need to put some work in. I was saying things, and somehow, like, every impression sounded like Alan Thicke. I'm just like, come to the garden.
Who's that?
I'm not alive right now, but I played hockey on the last day of my life.
Well, if you really want a hot segment, do the bad impression challenge with me sometime. Pick out a certain year and see how many awful impressions I can do from that year. Pick a year where Lanny Poffo was active, though, just in case.
No, that's too easy. That's too easy.
I don't want to.
1981, WWF. Scott, Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh, Sergeant Slaughter. Let me see. Oh, God. Where did I just saw him last night on the show?
All right.
You scum, you slam, you maggot.
That's horrible.
That's Bruno doing Slaughter.
What about Don Morocco?
Why I should be able to do that?
You know, when
is
I
had the roster,
when I had John Wilsbach on the show a few weeks back talking about that story where they played the promos in homeroom for that show he was involved in 1983, he actually got Morocco great because he did the one small thing. He was like, I'm not going to do it right. He's like, Jimmy Snuka, I'm going to come. Jimmy Snuka. Like, this is how his voice would go from loud to kind of just like a loud whisper. He got that perfectly.
Did you guys happen to see that match that was floating around recently? I don't know how old it is, but it's a very skinny, Scott can relate to this one participant. Very skinny and old boogie woogie man, Jimmy Valiant and Ricky Morton against George South and some other dude in a rainstorm.
I just saw it last night.
Yeah, someone said that they haven't watched it yet.
Oh my God. It is like, I mean, it made me feel like Shawn Michaels, like from what I've done. But, I mean, I guess considering the age and the psychology, and I would assume it was South at a Mason-Dixon line, and the fans down there still just get into the personalities and the crowd work and such. But
I'm looking at it thinking it would not be give them credit for going out there in horrible conditions. It was really pouring rain hard.
There was lightning.
And this is probably only a year or two old, if that, yet it's very recent. And it's awful, but I don't think it would be that much different without the rain. I think the match would be almost the same.
Brian, are you pulling it up? Because when he's quiet, he's doing something.
No, I'm trying to. The last guest we're supposed to have on the show has not written back to me with what phone number to call. So I may just try it here and see how it works, and it may not work at all. I'm going to watch it later. I'm not sure. Is that the same clip someone sent me where George South was the heel and on the back of his tights it said, like, I love Jesus?
Probably. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, because someone said, like, how's he a heel when he has I love Jesus on his, like, he's forcing the fans to boo Jesus? So someone sent me that too. People are sending me all sorts of George South all of a sudden for no reason the last couple of days. But talk amongst yourselves for a second, guys. I'm going to try to add our last guest here.
All right, Scott.
Okay.
How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm terrific. I made my brother sent me a brass spittoon today. like a vintage. Okay, vintage spittoon, and mostly because I'm always sending him and posting him these cartoons of the old Popeye and Wimpy cartoon, Thimble Theater, and whenever they're in the diner where Wimpy is always trying to get a hamburger, there are always the artist has always drawn spittoons all over the floor. And it's just something that cracks up my brother and I, and in a fit of extreme generosity, he saw a vintage old brass spittoon, sent that to me today, and I was really thrilled, very surprised and thrilled.
I would actually be thrilled in a different way, because now you're hearing a little bit of unedited, you know, and I don't hear yours either, your segments, but I always have some kind of phlegm breakdown
always.
When I'm on air.
Always.
And I have to find something. And yeah, so I could, you know, once the novelty wears off of the, you know, thanks to your brother and et cetera, I could actually use it for purpose on air. You know, get rid of some extra.
There you go.
All right, guys, hold on one second. Let's see if we can add this last person here on the air.
I got about 10 minutes more of Spittoon material. I'm going to add it in later.
All right, guys, we are attempting to get our next guest on the line. Let's see if he picks up the phone. You never know what will happen on the Super Podcast.
Anything can happen and probably will.
Hello?
Season's greetings!
Ah, season's fucking greetings!
No way.
Bobby, welcome to Opening Day Star Wars. You're on the line with me, Scott Cornish, and Tom Robinson. Before we get anywhere, who's going to win the World Series this year?
The Baltimore Orioles.
I'm going to hang up on you.
Well, you want me to say the fucking Mets?
Yeah, you know, bingo. Ding, ding, ding. Well, what's going on? How's it going, man?
Oh, man, just sitting here hanging out, you know, just chilling.
I understand.
Over here in the hood.
I understand you've become buddies with William Harding, the 605 Sugar Hole champion.
Yes. Yes, I have. I met him down at Lexicon. Real nice guy, man. Super nice guy.
Was that the one with Nancy Kerrigan?
What?
I just wait till you guys get what I'm saying.
You just killed the room, Tom.
That's not a first.
Well, it's better than killing a territory.
Just have a run of first either.
It's not even a first during this phone call.
Okay.
Well, Bobby, one of the discussions we've been having today is cross-eyed wrestlers. Who do you think of when we say cross-eyed wrestlers?
Cross-eyed wrestler. Well, fuck, immediately Shawn Michaels comes to mind after last night's Hall of Fame.
Yeah!
Holy shit. Did he get worse or what?
He could see eye to eye with Bonnie Franklin.
Wow.
I actually saw that live from Howard Stern in 1980.
I'm not going to name a couple I know, so... George Weincroft was, you know, he—I don't know if he was actually cross, he was blind though.
He was blind.
Back in the
he was
day.
Legally blind.
Yeah, yeah, he was legally blind because I saw him grab people out of the audience before, like just to get back to the ring. It was a good work. So
wow, I never saw him do that. That's interesting.
Well, like you know, in a cell.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of YouTube videos of George Weincroft doing commentary. Recently that Roy Lucier puts up, and I think he might also be legally dull.
That's good. It sounds like you guys have been having a good time today.
Yeah, pretty good time. It's been another fantastic Star Wars episode. We've got you on here. You'll be our last guest today. Kurt Brown has now missed the last three Star Wars specials. And he was going to be on today, but he got laryngitis. But hopefully Kurt will be on the next episode. He may have laryngitis because he just hosted a 4.5-hour show with me earlier this week. But Kurt will be back on soon. But Bobby, you missed the last one. You're here this time. What's been going on with you, man?
Man, just been staying busy, really. Got some new T-shirts in. I've been selling a few DVDs and, of course, you know, pushing my books and just kind of keep my finger on the pulse of the business, you know, cause like I say, it's kind of, I'm not in the wrestling business. I'm in a Bobby Blaze business, you know? So
those new shirts look great.
Yeah. That was my original design. And these are even better, I think, because they really brought the color out and it has an autograph on the back. So I'm real pleased with them. We'll have to do some swapping for a 605 and some other shirts that are out there.
I'll make a trade. So, that sounds all right.
Yeah.
With me.
Yeah. That's what I like to do.
Instead of sending me a shirt, can you send it to Australia? I think I may know someone who would love a Bobby Blaze shirt.
She'd probably hang out and sleep in it.
What were you going to say, Tom?
I saw recent pictures of Bobby at Lexington Comic Con or whatever it was, and a couple other things where you were, you know, making appearances. And, you know, I remember your look from Smoky Mountain, but you're still a big MF-er. We were talking about, you know, who's going to win the World Series, and I don't know if Brian or Scott is a baseball historian, but somebody I got to meet and got to know a little bit was Greg the Bull Luzinski. He was the left fielder for the Philadelphia Phillies back in the day when they were, you know, really good in 1980-ish. And you reminded me of the Bull with that big ass forearm, Bobby. How big are you right now? What's your stats?
Man, I'm. I don't know if I'm still 6'1". I might be 6 foot. I might have lost an inch due to gravity. But I don't miss any meals, I'll tell you that. I'm pretty heavy, actually. I'm about
what the hell are you doing those forearm curls like Ricky Steamboat was saying last night about Ruth?
Yeah, the one-arm 300-pound pulls. Yeah. I do a lot of 12-ounce curls, a lot of masturbation. I'm switch. You know, I can go either way on the masturbation, so I keep both arms pumped.
That's talent.
No, I just I've lost a little bit of strength.
They should change your
stuff, but
they should change your current gimmick to Bobby Glaze.
But
I've been killing this show the whole day.
Bobby, when you switch hands during that activity, do you ever feel like you're cheating on your main hand?
No, because what I do is I stay in an open relationship, and actually sometimes I even turn my hand upside down and get some strange from my other hand.
Well,
and believe it or not, one time I slammed my fucking hand in the dryer door, and there would have my sex life for a week.
I have a picture of my hand in my wallet. But anyway.
Bobby, let me ask you this. I saw pictures also. I know Rod Hicks sent in some pictures, some other listeners. I saw the pictures of William Harding at the Lexicon convention. And Al Snow is right there with you. You know, I'm trying to get into shape. Do you know where he's buying his vitamins? Because I think I want to try what he's getting.
Me too.
No, but I'm going to tell you, man, Al is jacked. He looks great. He's got such a positive attitude on life and outlook on life. And it was really great catching up with him. Of course, I caught up with Cornette. Always a pleasure to see Jim. But I haven't seen Al for quite a while. And, man, he didn't – just in the pictures didn't even do him justice. The dude is in shape, man. He could step in a ring with anyone right now, I believe. He looked that great, and just has such a great outlook on a positive outlook on everything. He inspired several people that day. I saw myself included. So, wow.
Yeah, I've seen other pictures actually with him working out and so forth. And
right.
He looks way better than when he was working for the major companies. He's just, like you said, he's a brick. And
well, I'm gonna tell you, he. When you see him, I mean, when you say he looked better than when he was working, he looks better than some of the workers today. You know, he really does.
Right on.
So.
Right on. I got you. And I kind of echo Brian's sentiment. I don't know if Brian's serious, but I am. I would love to take some of those vitamins that Al's doing at a latter stage in his life.
Yeah, I'm wondering the question to ask myself.
Maybe we can get a group deal, like a group rate.
Yeah, group rate. A group rate, yeah.
What's it like?
Not to forget about Austin Idol's nutrition and fitness.
No. But Bobby, what's it like for you when you do one of these conventions? Is it a fun experience? Is it a tiring experience?
Well, for me, you know, I had a blast. You know, I'd go back and do it again. I could not have done physically. I could not have done all 3 days. I'd done all day Saturday. Didn't like beat the hell out of me. That's just not something I make a part of my, you know, doing a couple appearances like that for me. I love them. And as long as the crowd is away from me, I can't do big crowds anymore like I used to. But if I'm a part of it where I've got, you know, some kind of safety behind me, you know, it's just one of those things because you're used to being out in a ring, and I felt safe in a ring. So to do that, you know, you're right there, you're at your table. And I only came out from behind my table to do a couple pictures with a couple of people. Most of them come back and took a picture with me. I loved it. I love seeing all the guys. I love seeing all the fans. And those Comic-Cons, man, you get to see so many cosplay people. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And everyone there was so nice and generous and just, you know, really interested in what you do and what you've done. I love those kind of things. But me personally, I limit them only because they just wear me out. You know, by the time I got up and got there, I done all day Saturday, and it was well worth my time. I love seeing everyone, but again, I just limit those things to the shows I go to, and those kind of appearances like that when I get the opportunity to do a Comic-Con. But it was a great experience. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I look forward to doing more.
Well, you know, one of the things I think people most commonly think when they hear Bobby Blaze is Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and of course, last night, Jim Cornette made a return to the WWE to induct Ricky and Robert, the Rock and Roll Express, into the Hall of Fame, where they belong. They belong in every Hall of Fame. What did you think of all that? And do you have any memories of working with Ricky and Robert?
Well, I stayed in touch with both of them. Of course, like I said, I saw Jimmy here just a couple weeks ago. That was the only reason I watched it last night. I was so excited to know that Jimmy was going to induct Ricky and Robert. And I was so excited to know that Ricky and Robert got into it. Now, I'm one of these people that just, you know, I think like them, along with several other people, and I won't go into all the names because we could probably say their name a bunch, but I know that the Hall of Fame is for the fans and that's paycheck for the guys, and that's great. But, man, we're so mainstream, everyone, you know, sees that. So I think they finally got their just due and get into the, you know, WWE Hall of Fame. The only word I could probably say is I'm stoked, man. Just a big fan of all three of them. They're great guys. All three of them are. When I first got to Smoky Mountain, Ricky and Robert, you know, they was very, very helpful on a babyface side, talking to me about gimmicks and where to stay at, and just super good guys. And then Jimmy, of course, there's no one else that could have inducted him to the Hall of Fame. You know, so I was glad to see Hell Freeze Over and him do it. And I thought he had a tremendous speech. I knew he was actually, it went about like I thought it would, because knowing how he spoke, knowing how he could talk, I thought he delivered a great speech. And knowing Ricky and Robert, I knew about what they were going to do. And they played off each other, and they do that really good. You know, I thought all those speeches were pretty good that I did watch. You know, I think DDP, if you watched it, DDP always come back, it was always about him. But the thing about him and Ricky and Robert, yeah, DDP put DDP over.
We were just saying that before you got on the air.
Oh, my gosh.
That's why I left.
In Lexington, I'm telling you, it was the same thing. We met a couple people there, and it was all about him. But, you know, Jimmy and Al, myself, we was there giving back to the fans, man. And I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back. That's just the way I am. But when I saw Ricky and Robert speaking, Jimmy was speaking about everyone through the years. And then when Ricky and Robert spoke, they fucking threw it all right back, man, to the fans and the boys. You know, Robert's brother, Ricky Gibson. You know, all those people they mentioned, it was all about the other people and about the fans. And it's like they were up there, and they could have stolen the spotlight and put it all about them, but they didn't, because that's how they connect to the people. And that's what they, like Jimmy said in his speech, that's what they were able to do. Both of those guys, and I've seen it firsthand. I've roomed with each of them. I've had them both in my house. I've booked them on shows, and I love those guys to death. And I'm telling you, I see it all the time. They know how to connect with the people. So there's a long version of I was fucking stoked.
Well, you know, one of the things that was shown last night, which really never got shown very often on wrestling TV, was how funny Robert Gibson is. Is he a funny guy in person?
Oh, my goodness, yes. He really is. He's one of those guys that you know, I was curious to see how much he was going to talk, to be honest with you. And I knew he could talk. But, yeah, he's one of them guys that's just – he knew his role out there. And, you know, he done the hand signal, you know, I love you or whatever. And every once in a while he'd say something. But, you know, Ricky was always more the talker in front of the people. But together, them two, I've seen him pull more ribs and tell more jokes and do things, you know, off camera. But, you know, Robert's real. You know, he talks and jokes around and – Just got a great attitude, and he's funnier than hell. And he's always pouring little ribs on people. You know, he'll pull up beside you in a car and say, "Hey, are my wheels rolling?" Just keep rolling forward. And just stupid shit, you know, or open my door and it'll be locked. Just any thing, you know, but he's real outgoing like that. You know, you just don't see that part of him on camera. You know, here's some of these guys that are like in a locker room really funny, and then they get in front of a microphone and they don't know how to talk very well. And it kind of, you know, they don't know how to convert that. Well, Robert's just the opposite. I think he can talk, but he never did out there on the microphone very often. But behind the scenes, yeah, he was a – I traveled with him quite a bit. Believe it or not, Smoky Mountain, they hardly ever roomed together. And I wasn't there but a few weeks, and Robert and I started rooming together. And I had some great times with him. And like I said, I've had him at my home, and, you know, we went to I used to take the dog track when he came up here to a place we used to bet the dogs at, and just hang out with him. He's just a hell of a good guy, man. Up until this year, we ran a show together once a year at a county fair, and always Ricky and Robert were the main event, of course. But, we did that every October. We had this little fair up here. We drew about 400, 450 people every year. It was a paid show, and everyone loved the Rock and Roll Express, and everyone – we've done it for the last 5 years, and every year – the people knew that it was going to be last, and they knew what was going to happen. But by God, people come to see them. And yeah, just great guys, man. Someone put me on Twitter there, like, they're the same guys that we always knew. And I was like, yeah, the same old good old boys we always knew, man. And I tell you, Sandy Scott told me in the locker room one time, I started running a town, Ashland, and I was picking up another town. And so I was kind of talking to Sandy about, you know, what I would need to do the show and this and that. But, anyway, Sandy comes in the locker room one time, and he's Ricky and Robert are standing there. He said, "Let me tell you all something." It was pretty much the whole locker room, a lot of baby faces. He said, "Man, these two guys right here have never changed. Whether they've been on top, whether they've been broke, whether they had money, these two guys right here, two of the best guys you'll ever meet." And I never will forget that, because I hadn't been to Smoky Mountain a whole long time when he said that. But every time I've ever been around them, they're nothing but just good guys, man. And again, I can never say anything bad about Jim. Hell, them guys, man, they've got, what, 35 years together one way or another, you know. And then you throw in the Midnight with that and everything else. It's just everything Jim said and then some. So, but yeah, Robert is a funny guy.
Let me ask you a couple of questions real quick about DDP. I'm very curious about two things. One, at the Lexington Comic and Toy Convention, Lexicon, that you were just recently at, and that DDP was there, did he have a camera crew with him?
Not on the floor where we were doing the where the fans were at the opening area. He did not. Now, whether he had one in the back or near in his hotel room, because he did some open yoga classes, so he may have had one for those. Because I know Theo Rossi, the guy from played Juice on Sons of Anarchy, was there. And anyway, they had some open yoga classes that DDP was doing in the morning. He may have had a crew for that, but out in the main area now on Saturday, he did not have any crew with him.
Okay. And then the second question is, you were in WCW. Did you ever deal with him or talk to him backstage at any of those shows? And what kind of reputation did he have?
Well, my experience with him was very good. Always come up to me. We shook hands. It was strictly just, two grown men at, you know, discussing business, just two gentlemen. Hey, how you doing? Nice to see you. This, that. The one time I had a dealing with him that I always remember the way it was. And of course I shook his hand, gave him a little hug, done a lesson there. And people just, you know, they go their own ways. We're all, you know, just doing our own thing. But I had a match with David Flair, and basically Arn had told me the less you give him, the better off you'll look. And so I basically, you know, beat the snot out of him before I hurt him, of course. Then the finish was Haku would come out, or Ming would come out and give me the tongue and dress grip while I had him down in the corner. And I just fall backwards, and he had put me in a figure four, and I wouldn't know what happened. So basically, beat the shit out of him and let him go over. And I never forget the next day in the airport, DDP come right up to me, and he like shook my hand. He said, "Hey, Bobby, thanks for taking care of that kid last night. You know, you did what you could do." And I always remember that. And, you know, several times I'd have some matches with, like, Glacier. Ray, I really liked Ray. You know, he'd come up to me and DDP would say, "Good match last night. You all had a really good match." You know, he was always real complimentary. One thing about it was, even back then, he was very, very positive, good outlook on things. But, you know, I know he's in the DDP business, you know. But I never had any problem with him whatsoever. And, of course, the fact that he was dating Kim, or married to her, I guess, and, you know, a lot of partying and stuff going on like that. I never went to his birthday parties or, you know, hung out after hours with him or anything. But other than a few times at the airport or something, you know, him saying something to me, always, again, in a positive light. So I have nothing bad to say about the gentleman. Like I said, that day there, he in Lexington, it was all about him. And, you know, he's selling his stuff, so he's selling him, you know, in a DDP yoga. So that's the first thing I caught last night, though, was it all came back to him. So, and I thought his speech was pretty good. I'm not, you know, browbeating him or anything. I thought he did a pretty good Dusty Rhodes impersonation.
Is that for true?
I agree. I thought he did a good Dusty.
Yeah.
Who does a bad Dusty?
Me.
I do, yeah.
Let me hear your Dusty, Scott.
Tell me to fuck off, Scott.
I'll just end of that. Yeah, Tia, why don't you take your friends and get the fuck out of here?
He Scott doesn't listen to anything I say because it was fuck off and take your friends with you. Scott's working on new material when I'm on. He's got Manhattan Transfer working.
I'm like an old fashioned wrestler. I don't work from the script, buddy.
That's right. Right off the fly. Did you notice last night, two things I noticed was, I don't know how long it went on, but pretty much the first, I don't know, all the way to the end, I know for sure, because even Angle called him out. How many times they fucking showed Ric Flair, man? I think that was a Hall of Fame for Ric Flair last night. Everyone there made reference to him and Dusty. I mean, everything come back to them too, it seemed like. Everyone had something to say about Dusty or Rick.
Yeah.
I kind of like that, you know, because you know, I don't know that we really associate them other than the few times that we're there. You know, we think of them more as the NWA.
NWA.
Where's Hogan?
Everyone up there has something to say about Dusty and Flair.
Yeah, I agree. And Flair was visible. And, you know, I've had my story here and otherwise about Rick, but I was... The ultimate Rick Mark in 1989.
I got to stop you, Tom. I haven't said this on the air, and I'm not going to say the person's name or all of the details, but a couple of weeks back, one of our listeners, and I know he's listening. If you want me to tell the story with your name or if you want to come on and tell it, you can. But one of our listeners had a TR Shock Ric Flair moment when he ran into Ric Flair in a bar, and it started out good, and then Ric Flair just turned on him quick and hard. To the point where, unlike you, you know, who he was sharing drinks with, and then he got mad and he, you know, almost got into a fight. He stormed off and you were left with all the drinks. Flair actually paid this man to leave. He said, "I will give you money if you get away from me right now." And he paid him. He paid him money in cash to, like, go to the other side of the bar.
I guess that was when Conrad was still funding it. But anyway,
this is after.
Oh, everything's a joke here today. Everything's a joke. But 89, Ric Flair was my idol, and you know he always let me be around. If you're, you know, when I was stoogin', and you know anybody could have kicked me out or whatever. But last night probably was more shots of Flair than anybody that was inducted. I agree, Bobby.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
A lot of
when
Shawn
he was
Michaels
still
too.
Active. Yeah, yeah.
But when he was still active. But when... Go ahead, Bobby.
No, that was Scott.
Oh, go ahead, Scott.
Thanks. When Flair was still active, it became a thing, and you were watching him
very much still in his prime, and it was sort of a gimmick, but at the time he was so damn good and traveled the world and met everybody and met the challenge of everybody and really was the embodiment of an NWA champion at that time. And there may have been people that were greater technical wrestlers, but he was so good that it became accepted while he was still active that he was the greatest that the world had ever seen. And that sometimes gets forgotten with all these sort of backstage stories and things like that. I look at it now and I say, oh yeah, they sort of were building this legacy and this image early on, but it was no joke. If people now, they'll say things, oh, he had the same match every time. No, he did not. He was absolutely as great as people say. And it's only now that it's been so many years later that people say, he wasn't, Sean was better at this or somebody else was better at that. But at the time, people didn't think it was ridiculous at all. It was completely believable in his prime that he was the greatest that anyone had ever seen.
Yeah, and he went from the NWA champion to the AA Intercontinental champion.
Can I have a shoot moment?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Be my guest.
If you can get a word in, take it.
since Scott was being real, I'm going to examine the human being because wrestlers are human beings. Us four are human beings. Ric Flair was adopted, which you all probably know. Maybe some of the listeners don't know. He was adopted by a prominent doctor. But to my knowledge, he never met his real father or mother or whatever. Maybe Brian can correct me, the historian. But, I mean, that's a psychological burden to carry. Maybe it was an addict or an alcoholic or something of that nature, because Rick's definitely a drinker. I won't label him anything else because I haven't spent enough time. And then on top of that, you know, he's famous for saying his wives were married, but he wasn't, and JR may have been the first to say that or whatever. But, I mean, that's an emotional roller coaster, especially when you're making all this money and et cetera, et cetera. And then he loses a son, which I would not wish on anyone. He lost a child. I have one, and I love her to death, and I couldn't imagine. And I do not wish that on anyone. So when I, you know, drink with Ric Flair on December of 2015 in Philly, and he's a little bit of a dick, and I get a little hot when he's a little bit of a dick, I do step back. I mean, it makes a nice, funny story, but, you know, for real, as they say, I mean, considering what the man's been through, and he absolutely, undeniably, like Scott said, was the benchmark of the business as far as a worker. And, I can't, there's a comic locally that says it about the most horrible people, but I'll just say this. I can't stay mad at that guy.
Yeah, it's not my business to pass judgment on stories I've heard about this or that person. I've never met him in person. He passed by me on the way back to a locker room after some great match in Utica, New York. And I just said, thanks, champ. And he looked at me and acknowledged and said, hey, thanks, boss, or whatever he said. And that's that. I'm not sitting there going, oh, look at these. That's why it's upsetting somehow when these stories, you know, he's had a rough couple of years and people have heard all the tales and this and that. That's not my business to pass judgment on that or on any of those people. I mean, as a fan, he's more than taken care of me beyond what you should expect of any wrestler. Big fan. Anyway.
Well, I've seen him. I've been around him, you know, and of course, WCW. I first met him in person way back when I went up to some TVs for New York. And it's when him and Piper was doing the TV for the world, the real world title when he came to WWF back in the day. And I ended up doing a little, a little match with Piper. Piper saw me and said, hey, who are you working, kid? And I was there in the back. I'd finished up. I'd been working up in Canada for a territory for about 16 weeks. And just come home looking for a paycheck, basically. Showed up. JJ brought me in. And anyway, I went in the back with Piper. And he said, stay right here. And I was in the back of the Civic Center in a bathroom, just hanging out waiting for a minute. He come back with Flair. And I had the bleached blonde hair then. And anyway, he said, hey, what do you think about this? And he ran an idea by Flair. And it was going through this a chair match back then. And basically, I got to do a whole thing with Piper. And Piper grabs a chair and said, this kid thinks he's Ric Flair. This kid thinks he's Ric Flair. And, of course, Flair was all cool with it. And so, we did a thing where basically we're talking in a locker room. And Piper's giving Vic the thing, the idea, and Flair's all for it. Of course, I introduced myself and blah, blah, blah. But the thing was, Rick just looks at me when Piper's doing his spew. He said, and remember this, kid, if you take that bump, don't forget to turn your head or your nose will look like this. I almost wanted to crack up, but I didn't because I'm there to work, So I was trying not to mark out, what I'm saying? But anyway, so Piper comes to the ring and he said, this kid thinks he's Flair. I actually spit on Piper and, he comes in the ring and we do the match, boom, boom, boom. And then he gets me with the chair as I'm going out of the ring because he didn't want to hit me with the chair because obviously he saved that for Flair. So that was my first time meeting him. But which was a great, I love that. It was just because he said that, remember, kid, if you take that bump, turn your head, and or your nose will look like this. And then in WCW when I was there, he had, I guess, a lot of coming and going issues with Bischoff and all that, the political bullshit, which I won't get into. But every time that I got to see him, and I'm going somewhere with this, when he worked, and I had seen him for years and years, of course, of all the shows I'd been to since way back when. But to see him, as a professional with each other, every card that I was on with him, and I don't care who he's working with or what program he was in, he busted his ass. And the time what I'm going to allude to is the time in Orlando, we were on our last TV taping at Universal Studios. And I was with the Armstrong brothers, Dean Malenko was there, Chris Jericho, and a couple other people, maybe Norman Smiley, myself. I mean, it's just a handful of guys. The last TV taping on a Sunday after being there 10 days at Universal Studios. And then, of course, you're doing spot shows. You still got to go out and do Raw, Nitro, and Thunder, and those shows too, and the house shows in the evening when you're there in Orlando. So Flair's there every day, putting his work in. The last day, last taping, last match, and I shit you not, guys, it was fucking Brad Armstrong and Ric Flair for the worldwide tapings. And I think they had about probably 12 minutes or so. And I kid you not, the guys I mentioned, these are guys I know for sure was there, was Jericho, Malenko, Smiley, and me and Scott and Steve Armstrong. Now, I don't know who else was around, but everyone had pretty much gone. You got fights to catch or you're going out to party or whatever because your last day had been in Florida for after 10 days or whatever. And we were running the monitor. And then, they're the people they brought in from the, Universal Studios. So it's just a piped in, basically, a piped in fucking crowd. Let's get out of the heat for a while and watch wrestling for an hour. And then guys had probably about 12 minutes. They probably had about the last 15 minutes. So let's say like 12 minutes to match the work. And them two guys went out there, and you'd have thought they had been fucking at the Omni or something, or Madison Square Garden, or the Cow Palace, or wherever. And they went out there and fucking tore it up for that 10 or 12 minutes. And it was that damn good. They busted their ass like they was like the world title was on the fucking line. And, of course, Brad could go, and him and Flair had worked together plenty of times. And they walked through the curtain afterwards. We all stood up and started giving them a standing ovation. And, you're talking after being down there for 10 fucking days, last match of the last taping, and them two guys got there. That's the kind of work ethic Ric Flair had. I always admired that. And we all shook his hand, you know, and we like marking out, I guess, if you will. We clapped, we shook his hand, and he shook our hand back and said, thank you, guys. That right there is what it's all about. That's pretty much what he said. That right there is what it's all about. If I got those words wrong, they're not too far wrong, because I think his answer was, that right there is what it's all about, you know. It was just because we were like, what a great match, you know. And he knew what it was, you know. He just went out there and busted his ass and done it. So, yeah, I don't judge people either for anything in his personal life, but professionally speaking, man, my goodness, that guy, I never saw him go less than 100% every time I've ever saw him.
Well, guys,
it's very cool to hear.
We are closing in on the end of the program now. This show has been on for a while, much longer than I even anticipated. So any closing remarks, comments, or thoughts before we get out of here? I'll start with you, Scott.
Oh, my goodness. I still enjoy watching WrestleMania. We're talking about that. Like I said, they're all a blur after maybe the last one that I got to go to. But I still like, it's way too long of a show. But beyond that, I love that they've created this thing that is really spectacular, and whatever they want to call it, it's still about wrestling, even with all the stuff that they throw in there. But they're to be commended. There's always something on there that you can take away from it and enjoy. And that's that. I don't say I get super excited. That's the one great regret, is that wrestling isn't as exciting to me as it was when I was in high school, and I could not wait for 6:05 on the Superstation to come on and things like that. But I still like watching it. I still like to see all that that pageantry and all the surprises and so forth. So I'm actually looking forward to it like I always do.
Tom, what do you think?
I think I got 13 beers in front of me that are empty, but that may explain some jokes that bombed. But anyway, on a serious note.
It's a poor carpenter that blames his tools, Tom.
Exactly. Like Scott said, I watch the Hall of Fame. I'll be watching NXT in a few hours or an hour or so. And I'll be watching WrestleMania, and I love the old days. I love them a little more than I should, probably. But I will watch the spectacle, and on paper, I don't think it's a great card, but sometimes that surprises us, armchair bookers or whatever. And I kind of love the business, and, you know, I love this platform because it's a bunch of people that I had no idea were out there. And the 605ers and guys like Bobby Blaze and Michael Elgin, who was on earlier, and Austin Idol and Jim Cornette and blah, 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 blah. I mean, they're still like legit fans, you know, in the spirit of the late Harry White, you know what I mean? And the guys that were around. Yeah. And I love the business. I love every aspect. I break balls. I try to poke fun. I try to make people laugh. But at the end of the day, a guy like whoever I break, I won't mention the name, but I couldn't lace their boots. And I can't stress that enough. I'll say it. I couldn't lace Tony Garea's boots in the ring.
I'll say I could have.
So, well, maybe you can, Brian. But,
it's Tony Garea, after all.
I'm just I don't want to break character or whatever, and I do characters on a show, and I'll be a heel the next time I sit in the co-host chair, but I love this weekend, and I love that I'm a part of something much bigger, and that's a Bobby Blaze, a Scott Cornish, and a Brian Last.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate that. And certainly, it definitely lets us know that 13 beers is the point at which Tom Robinson becomes sentimental on the Super Podcast. So that's our new
13 beer baby face turn.
Bobby, as we get ready to wrap things up, any closing thoughts? But also, I'll ask you the question every other guest has answered today. Do you have a favorite WrestleMania memory or moment?
Oh, You know, I like the first one, man. I mean, I just that they brought in so many celebrities, and it's that first thing, you know, the whole Mr. T, Muhammad Ali, all that Liberace, you know, all that stuff. But match-wise, of course, I've got to go to the, you know, Savage and Steamboat. That's my classic. You know, you got to go to that. You know, the most recent thing, I was totally, I'd have lost every time I have, which is not a lot, but if you'd have told me Undertaker was going to get beat, you know, at WrestleMania 30, I would have never, I'd have bet, you know, no way. So that was a shocking moment to me because, you know, as an armchair booker, you're sitting there going, oh, you know, you can't let the streak end. When it happened. But with that said, no, I'm just I'm a wrestling fan. I love the wrestling business. I was honored and privileged to be a part of something that's it's to me is so close to my heart, and that's professional wrestling. And I'm, you know, I'm one of these old, you know, school fans that, you know, this is the wrestling I remember the way it should be. I like that. I'm really fortunate to be a part of the 605, to meet you guys, to hang out with you, co-host with you, or just be a part of a show like this. It's just an honor. And with that said, I don't watch a lot of today's current product on television, but every year, and I've done this for years and years, is I start watching maybe sometimes a week or two before, or I stay up on what's going to happen, of course. And then I watch the Hall of Fame. So this is a wrestling weekend for me. I'll do what Tom and everyone said. I watched the Hall of Fame, and I enjoyed it. I'll watch NXT tonight, and I'm sure I'll enjoy it. And I'll watch Mania tomorrow. And sometimes, now, I don't know if I'll do this on Monday or not, but sometimes I go ahead and watch the following Monday Raw and see what happens. Yeah. But very rarely do I watch those things. Because that's just not my cup of tea anymore. It's a different product. It's a different animal. But I love it because it is, even though it's sports entertainment, you know, Vince McMahon's a fucking genius. And the people behind the spectacle of WrestleMania is such a granular, spectacular event that, you know, I pretty much make that my whole weekend. And I will say this, as much as I enjoyed the Hall of Fame last night, I'm sure NXT will be good. I'm sure Mania will be fine. Again, like what Tom said on paper, it may not look that great, but they'll pull out some shit that'll, I'm sure it'll shock all of us and entertain all of us. They'll get what they want, you know. And thing about it is, the 605, the podcast, those are things that keep me going. And I can guarantee you one thing that'll happen on Monday. Well, let's say one Sunday at WrestleMania, I can tell you one thing. That we all can probably agree on that will happen at WrestleMania. You want a spoiler alert?
Okay.
All right. Vince McMahon will fucking make money.
Well,
we all agree on that. Vince McMahon will make money.
Well, somebody's got to.
Yeah. And he doesn't need any kudos or any thanks from me. But I do want to thank whoever is responsible for pay-per-views not being $40 anymore.
Yeah, really. As we wrap things up, I will say if you have the WWE Network, Bobby, I encourage you, as I said at the very top of this show, the entire 1982 run of Mid-South Wrestling is now up on the network. And
I just saw someone post that today.
It is so great, great
stuff. Okay.
So I would encourage you to check that out. And again, we said it at the top of the show, but before we wrap things up, a couple quick notes. Of course, you guys know the website, 605pod.com, to manually download the show anytime you want. On Twitter, at 605pod, I'm at Great Brian Last. What are you guys at on Twitter?
I'm at Bobby Blaze 744.
Tom?
I'm at...
Tom's asleep. That was Scott?
I'm at TR Shock.
I'm at Scott Cornish 2 on Twitter.
Yes, Scott Cornish 2. I've got you on there, too. I've got all three of you on there.
I want to add, right. Before I do the little plug, I talked surprisingly with Austin Idol about the, you know, take a risk and things of that nature. I still haven't yet. I talked to Brian about this, but I still haven't yet. But I might have a better job starting Monday. So cross your fingers for me, guys. That's a shoot job,
right.
Non-wrestling gig. And you know, maybe I'll dye my hair blonde again. But anyway, I'm on Twitter at TRShock, and I always on Twitter or Facebook, and you can look and you can scroll back for goddamn when I was just doing the Dentist of the Week. 605pod.com.
That's
Amazon
right.
Links, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this is the show. This is the only podcast that matters. And I am so honored to be a part of it. And I'm so glad that Brian will edit out any bad jokes that I did today. And
well,
I love you guys.
Remember, there is limited editing, hopefully no editing when it comes to the Star Wars specials. But a couple other quick notes. If you want a 605 Super Podcast t-shirt or a Yo Mamba 605 shirt, you can go to tinyurl.com/superpodstore. More shirts and other merchandise probably within the next 2 months. I'm putting the final touches on different things I want to do, so stay tuned for that. tinyurl.com/superpodstore. The Amazon link, tinyurl.com/superpod. Amazon, spend the same amount of money you would normally spend on Amazon, but support this show in the process. We get a nice show of support from Amazon for every purchase you make using that link. And again, for the month of April, please consider doing a 30-day free trial of Amazon's Music Unlimited service, tinyurl.com/superpodmusic. This would greatly help the show out. Cancel before 30 days are up and you pay nothing. Please consider it. It would really help us out. tinyurl.com/superpodmusic. And of course, if you want to make a donation to the program, you could do so at paypal.me/superpodcast. And we are on Facebook. Join our ever-growing, always fun Facebook community. All the co-hosts you've heard on the show today have been active on that page, and many others have as well. And that, of course, is facebook.com/superpodcast. And with that said, opening day Star Wars is over. So until next time, let's go Mets!